Oh shit! No, I'm not. I'm confused now. I don't know what to do.
You done broke the podcast.
No. Hey, this is a podcast. I forgot to put the theme music in, but I'll do it later, and you won't know
Can
the
I
difference.
Supply it?
Yeah, do it. Go for it.
Yeah.
Gotta do that. This is not music. This is just a sound test.
This is the entire podcast Boing. Right here. Boing. This is life.
Yes. This is life. This is also a Boss Barrel Radio, episode 123, starring Jeff Brewer.
That's me.
How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing good. Some squats and
doing some squats.
School's beating me down, but here I am.
Squatting like a soldier.
Always. I'm in a permanent state of squatting. That's how I move around. Like, that's how I traverse the world.
That's good.
Squat.
Yeah. Closer to the ground, closer to the earth, more in touch with the energies.
I can detect incoming threats and respond more quickly. I'm in like a permanent attack pose.
No, you're in like crab battle position?
Yes. It has given me tremendous success with relationships.
Undoubtedly.
All the women go for the crab crouching man immediately.
Yeah.
They know he's ready to defend their honor and give them.
Well, I would imagine up there on like the northern east coast, you know, that's kind of what is like the standard definition for attractiveness, like how much you resemble a lobster or a crab or whatever seafood is.
You have to be ready at any given moment for a swarm of lobsters to appear, and then you can either scare them off by attacking them or by imitating them.
Right.
To make it appear as if you're not a threat to them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to understand your enemy by getting in their head and emulating them.
Exactly. Also by just covering your body with lobster carapace. Assembling a suit of armor.
That's great. Monster Hunter, I think, is coming out soon.
How apropos.
Yes.
Hey, did you watch the? Wasn't there a direct about it? They're gonna do some Zelda costumes and.
There was a direct, but I don't know if it was in English. So I've only caught the highlights from it.
Oh yeah.
Since yeah, you know, it's coming out in Japan.
Hey, I want that to come out. I want to have a reason to like. Enjoy Monster Hunter. I tried.
Have we talked about this? Do you like Monster Hunter?
I bought the PSP one when my Vita came, or when I got my Vita, just to have a game. And I was like, oh, everyone's talking about this. I can play it with an analog stick now. I'm gonna give it a shot. And I completed the tutorial, and then I went to the very first hunt, and I could not beat the first guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope.
Yeah.
And I tried the Monster Hunter 3 demo, and it was okay. I don't really get it though.
Oh, Monster Hunter Tri?
Yeah. I tried
the DS
and the 3DS demo.
3DS, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any familiarity with the series?
Yeah, I love Monster Hunter, but I've only played it alone.
Oh, that's so sad.
Which is I love sex, but I've only done it alone.
Yeah, and I feel like I need like friends who will play with me, but you know, I don't really want to play with randoms. So
yeah.
You just have to buy a Wii U. That's your next frivolous console purchase.
No, but I want a Vita TV.
I want a Vita TV. Well, I have no good reason to buy a Vita TV, but
exactly.
I think it's pretty cool.
I do too.
You.
Yeah, let's talk about the Vita TV.
Sure.
Hey, I'm Griff, by the way.
Oh yeah, that one.
This is a podcast.
It is a podcast. Two individuals are discussing relevant video game news of the week.
That's right. Semi live.
In a serialized format.
Absolutely. For your listening pleasure.
Yes, and also for your listening like suffering.
Yeah. If you disagree, fuck you.
This is supposed to be your worst nightmare.
Yeah. Send me an email, chump.
Yeah. Fuck you at. Eat my ass. Dot.
Dumpster.
US.gov. Yeah. So the Vita. So there was a thing. There was a Japanese event.
Yeah, like completely out of the blue. Secret.
Yeah. Well, it was like a TGS, a Tokyo Game Show lead-in, I think, or like a little appetizer of TGS.
Okay.
In Japan. And they're like, hey, we're going to finally talk about the PS4 and stuff in Japan because we haven't talked about that at all. And then they spent a huge portion of the conference talking about the Vita, which I think because they, for the first time, that I can remember, they Sony like supplied translated audio for the conference so Americans could watch it. I actually happened to be up really late doing homework that night.
It was like 3 in the morning.
Yeah, and I caught some of it, and it was really shitty translation, and there were some really funny moments, especially during a Knack trailer where this clearly like Asian American lady was doing voices for all of the characters in Knack. And you know how it's like essentially like a Disney movie with like larger than life villains with funny villainous voices. She was doing like a completely deadpan delivery of all the villains' lines. It was so funny. But anyway, so yeah, they had this thing ostensibly to talk about the PS4, and they spent a huge portion of it talking about the Vita. And there were some pretty big bombshells. First, they announced a redesign of the Vita, which had already been kind of hinted at.
But all in the wrong ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's lighter and it's thinner, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And it's got more battery life, which is great.
Yep.
But the screen is no longer an OLED, so all of us early adopters can feel good about our purchase.
Yay!
Better screen, so we don't have to feel like we need to buy the next edition.
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yeah, but, I mean, they do some good pack-in stuff with it, too, where it's like, hey, you get a gig of internal storage built into it, and something else, if I forget. No, I think that's it, yeah.
Colors.
Yeah, colors.
They're pretty muted colors, but, you know, people will buy that. And
What color do you want besides black for your device?
I don't know. I kind of like the more garish, outlandish colors, because I like for my handhelds to look really stupid.
Yeah.
So I want like a bright green handheld or something ridiculous like that. But
I feel pretty good about black since the Vita is like a very classy looking device. Like it fits in that entertainment center. It's like when I see the Monster Hunter Wii U and it has like all the bullshit around the outside. Like on the second screen, it has like all the Wind Waker. I'm sorry.
All the fancy trim and stuff. Yeah, that can backfire sometimes.
I think that just looks like a Christmas sweater. I'm like,
it kind of does, yeah. See, it depends on the device. Like, I have the Pikachu 3DS, mm-hmm. and for me, that's some could see that as garish, but
oh no,
but
I think the 3DS is like, it's like having a very small dog where it is your responsibility as its master to dress it up and make it look as ridiculous as possible to establish your dominance over it.
I think most people would rather have a 3DS that looks like all business, which to me is just hilarious.
No,
people bitching and moaning like on forums. They're like, oh my God, the 3DS looks like a toy. I'm like, that's what it is.
Right.
You crazy bastards.
Yep.
But yeah, I get where you're coming from on the Vita. I definitely think did you see the Final Fantasy X Vita?
No.
It looks so bad.
Sweet. I want to see it now.
It has like a render from the game. It has like, you know, the scene when Tidus like kisses Yuna at the lake?
Yeah.
It's just on the back.
Oh man!
Like, took a sticker and put it on there. Yeah. So the new Vita, you know, I mean, they're probably lowering costs is what people were saying. You know, that's good.
That would
Sony.
Make sense. You know, drop it by $20, $30.
Yeah. You know, maybe like, you know, girls want a pink one, or like maybe some teens want a cooler color. You know, like the lime green one. Maybe that'll go over well.
Or I think at the very least, like even if they don't initially drop the price on it, it probably makes it a lot easier to pack in with shit.
Exactly. Yeah. And the 1 gig means that if you want to go entirely retail carts, you can.
Yeah.
Theory, you never have to buy an $80 memory card or whatever the you know, N exchanges are over there.
Well, now you can get an even bigger memory card.
Yes, now you can get 64 gigs, which, you know, if you want to pay like $150 bucks.
I think it was $100 is what I heard, which is why I was pissed.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's really
But it may have been a yen conversion issue or something, since it's not actually available in the States yet. None of that stuff has been announced for U.S. yet.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a moment, but there's kind of an interesting dichotomy between Japan and the U.S. as to what Sony is prioritizing in each region. But yeah, to get back to some of the Vita stuff. So they announced this new revision, which, you know, some people will buy. You know, it's always a good thing. And then at the end of the conference, so they left Vita. They went over to PS4, which we'll come back to. And they came back at the end of the conference to Vita, and they announced something that I think nobody was expecting, which was Vita TV. And Vita TV is...
Love the name, by the way. I love that name.
It is a great name, and it's really weird because they took everything. They took the guts of the Vita, And they stuck it in a small, like, Roku, Apple TV style box.
A deck of playing cards.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it fits in a manila envelope or whatever. You know, whatever Steve Jobism you want to pull out for that sort of thing. And essentially, it is for all intents and purposes, a Vita that you hook up to your TV. And the cool thing is, the Vita's feature set, you wouldn't think it at first, but it actually kind of works well for like an entry-level console because they've been slowly building up this stable of really quality indie titles that are all available on Vita, which kind of already blow the Ouya's offerings out of the water.
Absolutely.
And this thing is in the exact same price range. It's $100. And if you get this, you know, you get your Spelunky, you get, you know, your Dive Kick or whatever else, you get you know, Lone Survivor, which is coming out, another big title.
You get an Uncharted game.
You get an Uncharted.
I think that's bigger than, it's easy to laugh off, but I think if you show that device off and you're like, yo, did you miss this Uncharted? You can play this on your TV-ass TV now.
Yeah, for $100. Yep. I mean, yeah, so that's, it was definitely a very interesting move, and I really don't think anyone saw it coming. And
you can play all your PSP games and exactly. PS1. Yeah. So essentially is the Vuyo. It's like, it's an emulator. But,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, done well.
But an officially supported one. Yeah, like not a shit emulator.
Right.
With your DualShock 3 natively. I mean, I guess the Ouya does too, but, you know, the controller that's packaged in the box for the Ouya, by and large, is agreed to be, you know, utter shit. So you've got like an actual game maker. And I think Sony really is the only dedicated games company that's entering this space right now. So they're kind of, I mean, they're competing with the likes of Apple and, you know, Roku and all of those. But in terms of game companies that are exploring this space, it's just Sony, I think.
Right. I'm also curious if this can probably take in anything from PlayStation Mobile too, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it is. I saw a video of it, and I actually hope they change this. But it's basically just the Vita UI. Which I guess you navigate with the DualShock. I hope they change that later.
How do you peel?
Oh, I don't know.
Do I touch my TV?
I really don't know. That's a good question, dude. I have no idea. It raises a number of interesting questions because, like, how do you play Gravity Rush?
I thought that the UI was based on the PS4 UI, which is all going to be integrated and overhauled after that system comes out.
I hope so. It's not entirely clear what they'll do with that. I mean, it raises a lot of interesting and kind of tantalizing questions because they definitely are going to have to deal with some compatibility issues with some of the earlier titles. I mean, there's going to be some games that just flat out won't work. I think other ones, they could probably adapt to the DualShock with a patch.
Right. So
I could see your Gravity Rush, you know, could probably be adapted pretty easily with just six-axis control and maybe, you know, throw some of the motion stuff on L2 and R2.
Yep. Because this little box just comes with a DualShock, and you're off.
Yeah, well, it doesn't... There were two packages available in Japan. So there was one that was about 100,000 yen. Is that right, 100,000? Is that $100? Is that $100?
Maybe 1,100. I don't know. Fuck it, man.
Yeah, whatever. So, yeah, I think it's 10,000 yen. Maybe it's 10,000 yen. 10,000 yen.
Whatever equals roughly 100 American dollars.
Yeah, so it's about 100 US dollars for the base model. And then you can get one that comes with like an 8 gig memory card and a DualShock for 150. I think they might be counting on people having DualShocks lying around. And they kind of intimated that later on the DualShock 4 will work with it. So there's also the potential of that touchpad on the DualShock 4 having a part to play in this whole operation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of interesting possibilities there, and it's going to be really cool to see how they leverage it.
Right, and it also lets you push your Vita stuff like on your handheld to your screen.
Is that right?
Yeah, I thought you can also use the Vita as a controller with it.
I hope so.
I thought that was it.
It's possible. I hadn't read about that.
I read something. It was possibly a retweet by somebody at Sony where it said any Sony Bluetooth device can be paired with this.
Oh, I hope that the Vita can. If you can push Vita content to your TV, that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
I hope so. But yeah, I hadn't heard anything about that yet. But I had heard that it will eventually function as a PS4 companion device. Like you can remote play from your PS4 to another TV in the house with this thing. And
yeah.
To me, that doesn't seem that valuable, But a lot of like hardcore people seem to be pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Like on NeoGAF, there was a lot of excitement about that feature.
I think it's super cool.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely it sounds super promising, and if they can nail remote play, which it kind of seems like they're doing a good job with it from what they've shown us.
Yeah.
Then that would be a nice arrow to put in their sling or whatever, like a nice feature to advertise, a nice bullet to put on the back of the box. It's going to break people in.
And that also makes for a freaking awesome bundle potential there, where it's like, hey, home movie enthusiasts, like home theater dudes, like here's your content box and here's your streaming box. You can have your sweet home theater set up in your viewing room and then in your bathroom too, with just this little box.
That's a great point. So you could have your PS4 is your dedicated Netflix box.
Exactly.
As the PS3 is for many, and then you stream your Netflix to multiple TVs. I didn't even think of that, to be honest. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's why I thought it just kind of acts as like a Wi-Fi extender, so you can just get your PS4 anywhere you go in your house.
Yeah, I think it's just really cool how they leveraged. I mean, I don't think when they were planning the Vita, I don't think they planned to have it involved this closely with TVs later in its life, but it's really interesting how they kind of pivoted, how they've kind of been slowly working towards this. And this is like a major step, but it's like when you look back, a lot of the features are like such a perfect fit for the TV, like the compatibility with older titles.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty obvious decision to me that all they did was say, hey, you know, it's rad, Apple TV, you push your content from your phone to your TV. Let's do that with this device.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I think the interesting thing for everyone is just how they leveraged something they already had that I guess nobody would have expected. Like they leveraged the Vita architecture to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's the really interesting piece, because it lowers the cost to entry for the Vita.
Vita console of the generation.
Well, I mean, obviously the Vita is not, it hasn't turned around, but you know, it's pretty cool.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Nobody was really expecting it. And I think it's really neat. And that kind of brings me to another thing, which is that Vita TV has not been announced at all in the U.S. yet, but it's coming out really soon in Japan. Like, I think, is it November or September? I don't even know.
I don't know. I'm wondering if it coincides with Gaikai stuff, though. Like, if they're going to kind of use the network architecture that exists in Japan to see how well they can push that functionality, you know, in an optimal setting.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Gaikai was... I don't know if Gaikai was anticipating this particular move or what, but they're definitely, I'm definitely seeing
everything that is doing streaming is always amended with Gaikai on the back of it. You know, it's always, oh, and we can do this where you play this thing from this thing, thanks to the power of Gaikai.
I think you're totally right. And I think that the cool thing about this is Sony is not really a company that previously has felt like it had like a cohesive strategy across all their devices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to feel like, whoa, like did they like plan all this shit? Like just to make this happen? Like, are they actually like, are the people who make the Vita and the people who make the PS4 like actually working together? And is there like an actual plan going on for once?
Right. Or, I mean, even if there's not an actual plan, at least they're doing better than before, where it's like, hey, you dudes have this rad shit and we have this rad shit. Let's talk and see if we can make them work together instead of it just being like these very separate, uninviting circles of, you know, exclusivity that don't ever have anything to do with each other. And it's just under this one umbrella of Sony.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm wondering how much of it is owing to some of this new blood that they kind of have brought to the fore recently. You know, you're getting like these people. Like, well, Shuhei Yoshida and Adam Boyce are kind of becoming like superstars.
I had also heard that this is kind of part of Kazuhira's doing when he stepped into the president role, of him just wanting to unify as much as possible and breaking down these barriers between all these departments and like gutting to some extent the failing sides of Sony, like the television and phone areas.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, I guess they haven't completely dropped out of those areas, which is interesting.
No.
And they just announced a new crazy super phone, but there's definitely been some strategic shifts over at Sony, and it seems to be benefiting a lot. I mean, when you look at their position a few years ago, they were not in an enviable place, and they're making a lot of cool moves right now. They might not be like the best possible moves, but they're really cool.
Right. Super cool. So. And if you want to think of it in terms of business sense, like the more shit Sony can pack into your house that is Sony branded, the more stuff they can push into it and then keep you in that Sony marketplace. So it's like, you know, you get your Vita TV and then it's like, well, I guess it's time to buy a new TV because it's 2020 and, you know, 4K is what everybody is doing. And then, you know, it's like, well, you know, you get the most optimal hookup if you use the Sony brand thing. And, you know, Sony's been a good thing to me. And, you know, I've been using Sony for all, so sorry. They have that Vita TV built right into their TVs now.
Yeah, they're kind of trying to build like a hardware and software ecosystem. They're trying to, they're definitely trying, like you said, to kind of get you locked into Sony and get you interested in the brand and having more items from the brand, like you said.
Right. Very much so taking an Apple mentality on this whole thing.
Yeah, but you know, it's they're kind of putting their own spin on it, and it's cool. I'm really liking what I'm seeing, and I'm excited for the potential of the product. I know it could just kind of peter out and not do so great.
Yeah.
I am encouraged, however, you know, this is obviously just one move, but I found it interesting that the day after the Vita TV announcement, before it has even been announced for the U.S., WayForward, you know, they made Double Dragon Neon, the Adventure Time license games.
They did the DuckTales remake.
DuckTales, you know, Mighty Switch Force, tons of games, pretty respected developer. They have been working on a Kickstarter for one of their original IPs, Shantae.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the day after the Vita TV was announced, they said, you know, hey, we're gonna be porting our engine that we used to make all our shit over to the Vita just as like part of our work for hire. So now if you want Shantae on Vita and we meet our initial funding goal, you can have it because we're making it.
Cool.
And it's really cool that just in the wake of this one announcement, you see like, hey, another indie is coming, is interested in the Vita.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But you know, obviously, there's no guarantees, but it's definitely a cool strategy.
Yeah.
So.
It is super cool because even with all these kind of like out of the blue moves Sony is making, it still always comes back to games first and like you know, content for the gamer first and foremost.
Yeah, it's really starting to feel like Sony has like a vision that, first of all, a vision that people like, but also just like a cohesive vision that they are sticking to and that they're really fleshing out and developing. And that's really cool because I don't think you've really seen that as much in previous years.
Giant enemy crabs and cell processors that connect with your microwave and washing machine to give you increased horsepower. You know, that's... It's cool in theory, but they never really, their bark was stronger than their bite. They never really, you know, made good on it.
Yeah. They were more about like, check out this curiosity than you know, this is our driving goal or whatever.
Wouldn't it be rad if you could compute off your refrigerator? You age it in your digital locker.
It would be rad, but it never happened.
Nope.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it might be too soon to pat Sony on the back because I also heard that they're heavily looking into virtual reality, like a VR headset.
Oh,
like
that thing that they're supposed to show at TGS sounds kind of cool, though.
Kinda. I'm so suspicious of your Oculus Rifts and your other headsets because who wants to put a giant thing on their face?
Me, you? I do.
I
want an Oculus Rift. I want an Oculus Rift.
How well did the Virtual Boy sell?
Extraordinarily well. It flew off the shelves. I mean, that's why it's so hard to find right now. It's so popular, and everybody wants to keep theirs.
I don't know. I'm not won over yet on that whole front. It's pretty cool, but I think it's a little excessive.
I think that Oculus Rift is a super cool idea, and having never actually interfaced with one. But
yeah,
I think it's that to me, that's the future of gaming where it's total immersion. Like that's what I think is so exciting. And if Sony wants to do some like, so if you remember maybe 6 to 8 months ago, there was like a video that came out from, I forget if it was Microsoft or Sony, but they were like, this shit was playing on TV. And then like the thing that was on TV, like your UI for your game like bled over beyond the TV into the room, and they're like, X company is experimenting with televisions that project beyond the scope of the television screen.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it was essentially like your peripheral is really, really fuzzy and shitty, but kind of going all over your room.
Okay.
I think that may have been Microsoft, and they're like, this is going to be Kinect 2.
That sounds very Microsoft. Didn't they have, I think it was called like a Luma Room or something?
Yes,
or a Luma
that sounds, yeah. That sounds dumb as shit, so yes.
I mean, it's cool. Interesting.
If that ends up being the Sony thing, where it's like you strap on your VR goggles and essentially you're just looking at your TV through Google Glass, and then you have some fucking UI shit off in the corners, and it extends, you know, the bullets that fly at my face, like that's great. That's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still.
I'd pay $100 for that easy, if not, you know, depending on. I could go up to 3, depending how super fucking rad it was.
Yeah. I mean,
the closer I get to Johnny Mnemonic, the better I feel.
I think it's still in its infancy, though. I think it's not really ready for prime time. So if they try to push that really hard and there's some bulky monstrosity, then we'll know that they've lost the plot a little bit. But yeah. We'll see what they do.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see, you know, what their next move is, because they've, like I said, they made a lot of cool moves. So we'll see what's next. But I was going to say, it was interesting because, so I looked up the Vita TV release date, and it's November 14th. And
weird.
If you recall, the PS4 comes out in the US on November 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting to see that parallel, because they also announced the PS4 release date in Japan, and it was February 22nd of 2014.
Yeah.
And I think that came as a surprise to a lot of people, too. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's a Japanese company. You'd expect them to get the console first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what you thought about that.
Here's my thought. Look at the launch lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I read.
What games speak to Japanese gamers there?
Yeah.
Drive
I mean, you're
Club?
Right, it is. Yeah. It's been very Western-focused, for sure.
Yeah.
So you think it's just a matter of... just wanting to beef up the launch lineup for Japanese people.
I think if you want to get like conspiracy theorists, there's a lot of like things we can speculate about what may be going on there. But I think if you just look straight at what we're dealing with right now, like why would Japanese gamers want that thing right now? One, there's no games that are interesting. Two, what is the market competition? Like who else is coming out in Japan roughly in the time of November?
PS3 is the market competition.
Right.
So they'd just be competing with themselves.
Right, and fucking Monster Hunter 4 is going to be out there anyway, so it's like, it's just like, whatever.
That's a good point, yeah. It's so interesting, though, to see I mean, obviously this is stuff that they've been planning for a while, so they kind of privileged Western development when making the PS4. It's just cool, but just interesting to see they're sort of pivoting towards the West with their console business, which I guess makes sense because consoles do better in the West and handhelds tend to do better in the East. But it came as a surprise to me, and I just thought that was kind of cool.
I recently listened to the 8-4 Play podcast, and are you familiar with them?
I've heard of them. I've never listened to them.
So they're like a localization company in Japan that are they're all native English speakers and from America. Yet they do translation work in Japan, and they translate both from Japanese to English and English to Japanese.
All right.
But what was really interesting is they were kind of commenting on the same thing, and they lamented the launch of the PS4, saying, we're not going to get any of that indie stuff, more than likely.
In Japan.
Japan isn't going to see those things, probably.
Mm.
Which is really, really fascinating to think about, like, yeah, that's probably true. Like, those little indie companies aren't going to have the budgets to do, like, mass localizations for a bunch of different territories.
Well, not only that, actually. You know how it works if you want to be an indie developer in Japan? It's, like, it's not easy.
What do you do? I'm sure you have to have, like, a big-name publisher that's behind
you.
Just because of, like, the weird hierarchy.
Yep. You can't, unless you're like, you work with an established publisher, your game can't be released. The self-publishing model hasn't really taken hold in Japan yet. There's a lot of weird rules you have to follow.
Probably a lot to do with PC culture there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, it's definitely a cultural issue. But it's just interesting. I mean, I guess, yeah, because like that's one of the things I'm most excited about for the PS4. I mean, so as a Japanese gamer, I don't know what exactly I would look forward to.
Right. And that's probably why phone games are thriving, like iOS games are thriving so well in Japan, is, you know, you can make shit for that and be an indie and
exactly,
make your
yeah.
stuff there, and it is successful.
Yeah,
but why make it for a PS4? Because you essentially can't, or Vita.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder how the app submission guidelines work there. I mean, I guess they're probably more tailored towards Western approaches. So yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. I didn't think about that before.
Think about it, man.
Oh, my mind is blown.
Put it back together, because we got to keep going.
Yeah, so that it's just interesting to see the different approaches they're taking in the different regions, and kind of cool. I don't know. It's I'm excited about the whole thing.
It's good to be the king.
We should just make generic remarks about that.
Yeah,
a stitch in time saves nine.
keep calm and continue buying Sony products.
I feel like a large portion of our conversation recently has been about Sony. They've just been making so many good moves.
They have. Well, I mean, honestly, I've been very pro-Sony for my entire life, and I'm very glad to see that they're, you know, giving me good reason to be so, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a big part of it. I mean, you know, whatever company you support, you want to have a good reason, and I don't think we had good reasons until, you know, maybe a year ago,
right.
So...
Sony was like, it was like, you know, like the girl that was like really popular and hot in like grade school, and then got really gross and braces and shit in like, you know, like middle school and high school. And now it's like, hey, man, you see him in the coffee shop in college and you're like, damn, Sony, what did you do?
That is very true. They definitely had that awkward adolescence, and they seem to be emerging from it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you got Microsoft. Have they had any like major developments? I didn't really put much on our little document, except that Major Nelson got a NeoGAF account, which I actually thought was kind of interesting. I observed some of his posts, and I'm intrigued to see how people in like developers and people in these kinds of positions that are like close to the nuts and bolts of things are going to represent themselves in these communities. Did you happen to look at any of his posts?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. It was very interesting. He very deftly straddled the line. Like, people asked him the predictable questions, like, what's your favorite PS3 game? He's like, oh, The Last of Us.
New title here.
it's interesting to see someone like him, whom I wouldn't really expect to engage in, like, real talk. You know, like, you expect someone in his position to kind of be spinning things most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then he goes on this forum where, like, that kind of thing isn't tolerated. So he has to kind of exist in this weird limbo. And I'm always intrigued by that. Like, I'm intrigued by Shuhei Yoshida's Twitter account. Like, do you follow him?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. He's an intriguing guy because, like, half the time he's, like, you know, he's this person, you know, president of, you know, whatever, president of some arm of Sony.
Mm-hmm.
But like, he also, you know, just has normal conversations and like engages in regular discussion and you know, joke around and stuff. It's just interesting to see these people in a more human role.
And he's also very, very smart about it too, where it's like, shout out to this, you know, kind of big name podcast in the game sphere, and he's like, I listen to you guys. And if he does or if he doesn't, at least he knows that that is something that people care about who are passionate about Sony products.
Yeah, it's a very clever bit of PR, just kind of cultivating those relationships, you know, through thick and thin, mm-hmm. for sure.
Right. If it is, like, true PR cultivation, like really dirty, like, you know, Velocity Girl type Microsoft bullshit from the early or the mid-2000s, or if it's kind of true, like, I would like to think that games journalism and games marketing is getting to a point now where they realize there is this very vocal minority that are kind of tastemakers, and it's wrong to kind of push them aside and treat them like fools and idiots and like they don't know, and they'll just ride the bandwagon with whatever. And they're kind of talking to them and embracing them and making them a part of everything that's going on in the whole ecosystem at this point.
Yeah, and I think there a lot of them, you know, not everyone are getting to points like where they can respect, even if the people whom they have the relationship with, like the journalists, don't give them exactly what they want. Like, I know that, you know, Jim Sterling, you're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
He, like, wrote a review for Killzone Mercenary. He gave it, like, an 8. He said it was a fun game. And Shuhei Yoshida, you know, retweeted that. And, you know, other developers or people have gotten upset about, you know, an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting to see sort of they understand the long-term value of engaging with people. And yes. I think Major Nelson getting on NeoGAF is another perfect example. You know, Microsoft understands the long-term value of engaging with these highly specialized, highly knowledgeable enthusiasts who are a minority, but right. They have some important, intangible role to play.
Right. Stop hanging out with Felicia Days and start hanging out with, you know, the Dale Norths.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just I just find it very fascinating. So that's why I happened to put that on the document, because I was endlessly intrigued by his responses to posts and things like that. And I see Jamie on Skype, and I want to ask if he wants to join our
call. Give him a shout out.
He said he was pretty busy.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to have him on.
So I guess that's really all that was happening for news this week by any notable anything notable. Like, I think there was some Mario World 3D Land 2 Worlds, 3D Worlds, whatever the hell that new Wii game, box art launched.
Yeah, box art leaking.
Wii U copies of Wonderful 101 are getting mixed reviews, but mixed in a positive angle. Like, a lot of, like, high-end, like, C's to A's, if you want to put it in grammatical terms, but, like, doing very well, but people saying, like, it may not be a kid's game, or it may not be the great, like, essentially, it's kind of coming down to, hey, it's another Kamiya game, it's another Platinum game, and, you know, it is really kid-friendly, but actually playing it is totally rad for adults, too. However, yeah. It may not be enough in either direction to be totally awesome and shine.
Yeah, it seems like a game where if you love Kamiya's, like, output, and you love his like, vision, or, like, what his goals are for games, mm-hmm. then you will probably love the game. But, like, on its own, without looking at the person behind it, it's, like, it's got some issues. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not going to save the Wii U.
No.
Not that I ever thought it would, but, yeah, it's got some kind of lukewarm response. I'll probably pick it up, definitely get my impressions of it, just because, you know, it's a Wii U game, and those are a rare,
few and far
between, rare commodity.
Yeah.
Something that actually I wanted to quickly just mention that looked pretty cool, and it's not out yet, so I can't really talk about it too much. Did you hear about Eldritch?
Mm-mm.
Eldritch, okay, so you've played Splunky, right?
Yep, yes.
Have you played Binding of Isaac at all?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. So Eldritch is apparently like Spelunky and Binding of Isaac, which is like bullet hell roguelike, had a baby, and there was some Lovecraft in it.
Hmm.
And it is made by some ex-Bioshock Borderlands people.
Okay.
And it looks really cool. And it
Wait,
is like
Bioshock and Borderlands people?
Yes.
That's a weird combination.
Well, they were both over at was
Gearbox Borderlands? and Irrational Folk?
Was Borderlands published by 2K?
Published by, but developed by Gearbox.
Studios,
Gearbox
so
is like Duke Nukem heritage.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I know it's two separate studios. But yeah, okay. So they have the link of 2K. But yeah,
okay, so L.A. Noir-ish.
I see what you did there. Yeah, so... Yeah, I don't know how they got together, but it's a really cool-looking game. It's one of those indie titles that I'm really excited about. It's kind of got a little bit of a Minecraft aesthetic going on, which is going to turn off a lot of people. But it's more claustrophobic, confined spaces. And you're a dude wandering around in a dungeon. You got your permadeath. You got your weapons and your monsters and your shops that you can steal shit from and anger shopkeepers. And it looks really cool, and I'm really excited about that.
Nice.
And I just wanted to put it on the map because when I bought it pre-release and As soon as it comes out in beta in late September, I'm definitely going to give some impressions on it because I'm really pumped for it. Hmm. Love that shit. So yeah. Otherwise, I don't know. Anything else on the radar?
For upcoming games?
Or just generally speaking.
I don't know. I'm always looking for a new Vita game, honestly. I really have to resist. The only thing that... Okay, so getting into the games I've played this week. The only thing that prevents... The only thing that is preventing me from going and downloading some new Vita game is VLR.
Okay.
Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward. It is... Playing that game has kind of taken hold of me, like, in a really bizarre way.
Interesting.
Where I'm having a really good time playing it, but I'm also getting really impatient with the puzzles. Like, you know, I've pulled up like a spoiler free walkthrough where I'll give myself like, okay, you've got 10 minutes to go through this puzzle, and if you ever get to a small portion of it that is just stupidly stumping, then just consult guide, because I don't have time to work out this dumb, you know, Sally is taller than Jimmy and Jimmy is shorter than Archibald, and Archibald weighs more than Reginald, and Reginald is more invisible than Imhotep. Which one walked the furthest from Grandma's house? Like, I don't have time for those dumb logic puzzles, and I'm stupid. So I'll give it a couple tries, and I'm like, fuck it, all right? Just give me the answer.
Can't you turn off the puzzles?
You can turn on easy mode, which gives you, like, hints and shit.
Uh-huh.
But it also like explicitly tells you many times in the game where it's like, hey, if you turn it to easy mode, things you're going to get different shit.
Oh, like you don't get the good ending.
It might be that like they're very much making it apparent that it's not the same. And from everything that I've heard about this game, like I know that it can be very punishing and cruel with like, hey, you didn't jump all the lightning strikes. Like, you have to go and redo everything.
Was that an FF10 reference?
Yeah.
did you get Lulu's ultimate
fuck
weapon?
No, I'm not. I'm not crazy.
I didn't either.
I know a lot of people who have, which is, and I'm surprised you didn't. That's the dedication I would see from you.
I started to go from it. Yeah, I know. This is the guy who did the level one Final Fantasy IX challenge. Yeah, I started to do it, and I don't want to time for that long. Like, I don't want to have to be on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, you don't have time for that
shit. I prefer to have take my time and planning.
Take your bronchitis and get the hell out of here. Don't have time for that shit.
Exactly.
So
VLR, yeah.
VLR, yeah. So what's been happening is I've been playing the game, and it gets into, like, the story mode where it's like reading text because I don't have the volume on because I'm, like, you know, not... I'm like watching a movie or something while I'm playing it, which I have been watching a lot of movies lately. It's very strange for me. So I'm playing through it, and I'll like save. And I'm really gun shy now because I did that before. Like right when I started it, I was playing it. I got to a point, I saved, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm gonna peel this one away and play something else right now. I go back into VLR, and it's like, hey, new game. And I'm like,
what?
No, I made a save, dude. And it's like, new game.
That sucks.
Do you want? I was like, no, load my save. I was like, new game. No, goddammit, I saved it. There's something in this memory card being consumed by your save data right now. It's like, new game. No.
You want new game?
Yeah, so I'm really terrified of closing the game out.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
You better make sure nothing's up in your memory card, too. This is the second fucking weird error you've told me about.
I looked up that MMM2 thing, and it's a sim issue. And okay. They're like, yeah, there's a lot of known issues with that. And it's like, yeah, you got a bad sim card. Just switch it out. I'm like, okay.
Switch it out for that other sim card you're definitely going to use.
Right. I'm not going to return my Vita because its sim card isn't working, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, that's like turning in your 2DS because your 3D screen isn't working.
The one that I'm definitely going to.
But VLR has taken this weird turn now where I've played through it to a certain point, and I've gone through multiple paths that branch, and you can kind of see which paths you can take and which ones you can't. And there are very definite moments where it's like, here's a branching path. And 50% of the time it's like, do you want to go A, B, or C? And then it'll say, and the next path, it's like, you don't have a fucking choice. You're going this way now. Even though you can see there's two choices here, you don't get the choice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's very odd.
Yeah. But I have a feeling it all ties back into what your initial few choices are. And I've gotten to a point now where it was like, you know, save your game for the first time in 5 hours. It was like, save. And then it showed this huge grid of every possible route you can go in the game. And I'm like, well, that's just like the fucking blast door shut and showed me the island map, because holy balls, just, here we go.
They just pulled back the curtains on the whole operation.
Yeah. And I kind of knew, actually reminds I knew me that, of, but oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, that reminds me of a game I played called No One Has to Die. It's a browser-based game. You can play it on, you know, any computer. And it is a room escape game where people die. Just kind of like Virtue's Last Reward. And the emphasis, without giving too much away, the emphasis is on exploring every possible path, which then unlocks a new path.
See, it's really cool. Yeah. I feel like that's the route we're going now, where I got to a point where it's like, somebody has to die. And then it's like, hep. Pause, stop, restart,
yeah,
go again. Now, the really frustrating thing is, if you remember on last episode, I was like, hey, you know what sucks about this game? The annoying, repetitive inventory management bullshit of combine this with this, combine this with this, rotate the menu, click on this shit, talk through this dialogue. This is like at reading at a fourth grade, like R.L. Stein pace. Like, it is just tedious. And then now it's like, yep, start it all again. And there's no goddamn fast skip.
The second attempt?
Maybe I'm just praying that the third attempt they're going to be like, no, you're good, man. You're good.
Yeah, because one of the cool things about that No One Has to Die game is you can just skip everything the second time through. Like, you skip all the texts that you've already seen.
God, I hope to God it gets to that point, because it's like, man, I don't know if I can fucking combine this screwdriver with its screwdriver bits and unscrew this stupid panel and do this. I can do this fucking block puzzle in my sleep now.
Yeah, you gotta check out No One Has to Die. It takes like probably like an hour and a half to finish. It's a really cool little game, and it's totally free. But, and it actually, one of the interesting things about it is it completely justifies having branching paths.
And that's what I've heard about VLR too. It is such an amazing game in every little nuance that it has to it. Like, everything that it does for story, everything it does for puzzle, how it justifies going back and replaying everything. And then even to the game previous, which was what, like nine hours, nine doors, or something like that. Yeah, yeah. And it's supposed to be very, very directly tied to that. Mm-hmm. Like, to the point of, hey, you need to play this game before you go play VLR.
Yeah, that's what's holding me up, honestly.
Yeah, and but the thing is, every bit that I spend playing this game, the more I'm really, really falling in love with the story. Not necessarily the characters or the gameplay, but just loving being on this ride. And I want to see more of it. So,
well, that sounds pretty compelling to me. I have access to 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors. So maybe I will. Maybe I will start with that.
You should have VLR too for Plus.
I do have VLR. I just haven't touched it, mostly because I want to have experience with the first title first.
Sure. Well, speaking of highly compelling story modes, tell me about your time with Gone Home.
Okay, so Gone Home, I finally got it to work by playing it on my tower PC rather than the one that I built for my TV, which kind of sucked, but... Gone Home is really cool. I agree with a lot of what Jamie said about it. I think one of the coolest things about it, so obviously, you know, it is essentially just, you know, a click on everything in your environment kind of game. Like, you go into the house, you click on everything. Eventually, if you just keep clicking shit, you're going to find everything you need, and you're going to be fed a story.
Okay.
But there is enough interesting little bits and unexpected little moments to still make you feel like you have some agency, like you have some involvement in making the story happen. So I think they avoid the pitfall of just like walk down a hallway, click X every few seconds, because there is enough unexpected and maybe not immediately apparent elements that emerge throughout the story that make it feel like you have, like I said, you have some role in making the story unfold. So I think they avoid that pitfall. I think another cool thing that they do, without, again, without spoiling too much, is the story they have to tell is so in the story they have to tell, I would say they tread ground that video games don't usually tread, for one thing. But they don't, they kind of avoid being like lazy or cheap or like taking the easy route in delivering their story. They don't go for the obvious typical video game type conflict, like with like a villain or like some horrible event. Everything is just kind of like,
there's no obvious antagonist or obvious motivation right at the beginning. Like, no amnesia, no god, no supervillain or superpowers.
They're very restrained in their deploying of like Deus Ex Machina
MacGuffins. Like something.
Exactly. Or just like something, some, you know, manufactured conflict or some kind of, you know, horrible event. Like, you don't go in the house and then, you know, like, oh my God, there's a killer in the house. Mm-hmm. It's much more, the game is better for it because it actually feels more real when you don't have to deal with this like unbelievably fantastical situation.
Okay.
Like, you could actually, like, by the time the story is done, you're like, yeah, that could totally have happened.
Is it appealing though? Like, I guess that's my question. Not specifically for Gone Home, but because it sounds cool. Like, everything that I've heard about Gone Home, Jamie made it sound really compelling and interesting last week, and I want to play it. It's just, do we see a future for games like this, or will it just be too boring?
Well, the thing is, so the ultimate, when the story is all said and done, you're like, yeah, that could have happened. But throughout the story, they kind of have their cake and eat it too, because like I said, they're remarkably restrained in kind of bringing out the crazy shit to really hook you in. Mm-hmm. But because you kind of get the story in little fragments, you actually, again, without giving too much away, you hear things that kind of slowly develop the story. The times where they cut off the things that you hear kind of set up like these implied or expected conflicts that maybe don't play out in the way that you think they would. So like, maybe they'll set up a scenario where like you think like, oh my God, something terrible is going to happen to character X. So, but when you come back to the story, they've actually taken maybe a little more conventional approach, but the conventional approach that they've taken is so, I guess, well-written, and it feels so, it's so like emotionally, true or spot on in what it wants to convey, that like you quickly forgive the fact that like your expectation wasn't met, but you also have the benefit of like having these expectations, like what's going on here, like what's going to happen, that you keep getting, and then like it kind of subverts your expectations and delivers something maybe a little less exciting a little less dramatic,
more grounded in reality.
A little more grounded, but equal dramatic value, equal emotional weight or whatever else. And in fact, it's actually a better, more mature game for that. But it definitely it's not unwilling to like play on fear and play on, you know, potential for tragedy and stuff like that. Because you're definitely going to feel uneasy like in your home. You know, you're definitely, even if you don't have to be afraid, you're definitely going to be afraid. Mm-hmm. And you're still going to experience those sensations. So they kind of manage to keep you compelled, keep you involved, keep the player on their toes, even while delivering a story that maybe like if they just gave it to you all at once, maybe wouldn't be quite as, I don't know. I think even if they gave it to you all at once, I think it'd still be a really cool story. But I think they achieve a kind of pacing that I don't think you could achieve in a movie.
Okay.
By letting you interact with the environment on your terms.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool. So I really enjoyed it. I really like the story. I will say I didn't cry, but I thought it was a really cool story, and I was definitely touched by it.
Sure.
And I definitely think you should check it out, you know, just because, you know, it's partially because it's that game everyone's talking about, but also because it's a fun game. I had a great time with it.
I want to play it. And honestly, I feel $20 is too much. Mm-hmm. But as time keeps continuing to go on and I have nothing to play, it sounds more and more appealing.
Yeah, like in mid-October, you'll break down and you'll grab it or something like that. But yeah,
what's even happening in October? Yep. Dude, whatever. I'm not going to have time. I'm going to be fucking petting the shit out of my Pikachus.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. On your brand new 2DS that you bought with me as a measure of solidarity.
Imported from Japan. Yeah.
on your 3DS TV.
Yeah. Oh man.
With your 800 or your 400 by 240 resolution.
No, the TV is just a DS. You take one more step down.
Oh man.
It's a clamshell design TV that you close when you're done watching.
Yeah, getting back to Gone Home, just to kind of summarize, I think I really had a great time with it. I thought it was a really fantastic game. I don't think that it like completely changes everything at all, but I really liked it. I thought it was a really, really great game. So really well made, really fun. You know, I had a great couple hours playing it. I guess 4 hours maybe.
Yeah, cool.
So
I'm still in. I still want to play that game a lot. If we were to skip to our next segment, that would be the game that I would list as saying, this is one of these things I want to play this year for sure.
You should. If we want to transition over there, I'll just mention I've played some Spelunky this week, as I have every week, and I'm still friggin' addicted to that game.
And you played more Brothers?
I played a little bit more, but not really anything appreciable to add any additional comments. Mm-hmm. It still looks great. You know, I'm still really excited about it, but... nothing too new. Jamie is interested in hopping on the podcast for a couple minutes.
Hop on in.
Okay,
actually,
I'm gonna add him.
If you're gonna add him, give me 5 minutes. I gotta take a break.
Totally.
Let's take a break.
Okay. Break.
Break music.
Bow. I'm back.
Well, hello.
I was hoping someone would do the Z105, the, and we're back.
Hey, it's the morning show. Let's get radio, or let's get Traffic by James Shearer.
And then you got to cue up all the different sound bites.
Like, yeah. Jamie, how does the traffic look like on the 419?
On 419, we got an accident on the left side. It's going to block your lane. It's being cleared right now. So you can get through that and it'll...
All right, thanks. Back to Jeff for weather.
It's raining.
Fucking hurricanes.
Done rain. It actually was raining pretty hard here, and while you were gone, Griffin, my lights flickered ever so slightly. So
oh no.
I may be dropped from the podcast. Although I don't think we've ever lost power since we moved in here, knock on wood.
Nice.
Oh, that's good. Good for
we're
you.
Right across the school, so I think we're like privileged on the power grid. It's a good strategy.
Right. I think that my super router has helped a lot too.
Your super router? I think it's supporting both of us.
Yep.
The super router.
It's very
super
encouraging.
Super router.
I got N. Recently.
I thought you meant N, the ninja game.
I thought you meant N plus.
Wireless. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, Griffin.
Nope. I did play games.
What'd you play?
Brothers. Great.
Brothers.
Just for a little bit. I also played more Rogue Legacy. That game's awesome.
Okay.
I played... I can't remember. I downloaded a lot of games.
Oh, nice. That's downloading is half the battle.
Exactly. I downloaded both of the PlayStation Plus Resident Evil games. I can't even figure out like what games they are.
I think they're the light gun games that originally were available on Wii.
Is it like
really?
The
Gun Survivor?
Gun? Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It's like it's an on rails light gun game where you like go through the mansion. I think
I read the description like 5 times and I can't make sense of it because it's like play the with the original characters in the original setting but in space with.
Oh, it's Raccoon City Chronicles. Raccoon City.
They're like the Dark Side Chronicles and Umbrella Chronicles. I think they're called. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're based off the Wii titles. They're just HD versions of the Light Gun Wii titles. Which...
Well, like Crapcom.
Boom.
Well played. You just dropped the bomb. Now you have to leave. Just walk out.
Speaking of Crapcom, anybody still into Deep Down?
So many puns that I just will resist making.
Anybody want to get down on Deep Down?
I'd like to go deep down or deep down.
Googling it right now.
Well, I thought it looked pretty sick.
Sick as in ill or sick as in yucky?
I'll go with the first one.
Okay.
I see a dragon. There's a dragon.
I'm cool with stuff that kind of looks like Dark Souls.
Are you cool with Dark Souls meets Assassin's Creed?
Yeah. I'm all right. The coolest part about Assassin's Creed is the future thing.
Exactly.
The actual gameplay part I don't like. So if they put the Dark Souls in the Assassin's Creed, I'm cool with that.
All right.
What'd you think?
Excuse me. Actually, that's exactly how I feel. And that's how I felt about the initial Dark Soul or Deep Down reveal, where I was like, this is not real. This cannot be real. Like, this is concept art as a video. And now the more shit that's coming out from it is like, yep, this tells me absolutely nothing about the real game. Like,
they showed a video, like a video of all the PlayStation devices working in harmony or whatever. You
and
know,
it's always online.
Yeah, that's interesting. They showed a video though, and they showed something that looked a little like a tiny bit shittier than what we saw in the video. Like you could actually see like where like shit was like being rendered and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that is more indicative of the gameplay. So hopefully it'll look good.
We'll see.
But yeah. Did you hear anything, Jamie, about the recent Sony event?
I saw the new PlayStation Vita games, PlayStation Vita consoles.
Did you see the Vita TV?
Yes.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Go get it.
That looks cool.
Go get a Vita before the Vita sucks, Jamie.
Wait, what?
You gotta get the OLED one. Yep. The new ones are gonna be LCD screens.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yes, you do.
I do.
Yeah,
you do. You need to buy now.
No, I want the blue one.
Buy now.
Don't get the blue one.
I want the blue one, and I'm gonna get a blue iPhone 5C to go with it.
Oh shit! Yeah, we didn't talk about that. Yeah.
And I'm gonna get a blue like suit, like a blue suede suit, also,
and some blue suede shoes.
Blue suede shoes.
So you can put them on.
This is just like, and then you're gonna reenact the Gangnam video.
Exactly.
I was recently at a wedding. We had to do Gangnam Style. And I was doing a horrible job.
Okay, that sounds awful. But
I'm interested.
I'm interested in how much worse the screen is going to be. Or are you making jokes?
They showed an image, and it's definitely appreciably worse. It might have more accurate color reproduction, but it's not. It doesn't have that really cool poppy saturated look that OLEDs have.
Mm.
It does have a better battery, and it's lighter and thinner, though.
Yeah.
But my portable consoles are fashion statements only.
If I were considering right now, I might consider the new model. I think Griffin is squarely in the old model camp, but I might even consider it just for the extra hour of battery life.
If you get a Vita TV, can you play downloaded Vita games on it?
Yep. If they don't require the touchpad.
Okay. Does Gravity Rush require the touchpad?
It does. I would wait because they may patch it to work with the DualShock.
I think that you can use your Vita to play the Vita TV.
Yeah, Griffin is saying that. I don't remember them ever announcing that, but he seems intent, and I didn't read everything, so it's very possible.
If I bought a Vita TV, I would buy it to save money and not get a Vita.
Well, you're doing it wrong.
You could definitely do that. I mean, it's not going to be announced in the U.S. probably for a little while, so you should wait.
The new Vitas or Vita TV?
Los
dos. Either one, but you should wait and see.
Gotcha. I'm glad to see they're breathing life into it, and they've been thinking about it, and they're not just having it sit on the shelf and just saying to each other, "Oh, it's going to work. Don't worry about it."
One of these days, Vita.
Yeah, we were talking about how Sony actually seems to have like a vision and a strategy, and that's like the thing I think that's made them so exciting for everyone. Plus, they've been making a lot of really cool moves. But
yes, agreed.
I was going to say, one of the highlights of that Vita event was Andrew House bringing out the Vita TV because he spoke like immaculate Japanese. And when he said PlayStation Vita, he was like, PlayStation Vita.
Right. Oh, man.
That's all.
Well, since we've covered all that stuff, do you want to jump into our second segment thing of games of the year talk-ish?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, great.
So how did you want to run this down?
Broach this subject? Well, Jeff, when we had talked last week about what this was all entailing, it all kind of came from my desire to talk about things we've played this year. You know, we're well beyond the midway point, and, you know, we're seeing, like, the event horizon of the end of the year with the new console coming out here in the next 2 months. So I think it's a good time to kind of recap and look back at what we have been playing and enjoying. And I wrote something last year around this time. Mm-hmm. It was, like, kind of just my thoughts on not really the year as a whole, but just games that I was interested in. So I wrote a bit about, like, what games I thought were cool for very specific reasons, what games I wanted to play, and what games I thought were totally amazing or something like that. So, you know, I think what's in a little bit more condensed fashion, I think it might be a good idea to look back at the year as a whole and say, you know, we're kind of getting into that end of the year, so what are some things people should play to be aware or to have a stance in the end of the year, game of the year discussion?
Okay. Yeah, because I actually made a list, which I didn't share with you, of I tried to remember everything I'd played this year. Maybe we can bring that in too. But did you want to get the discussion started since you've got some experience and you kind of have a vision for how you want to tackle this?
Sure. Yeah.
Can I say, Jeff? I have no idea what Jeff is going to say, but can I say Jeff's? Can I just say what he's going to say?
Yeah, everybody should say, well, this is even better. I think that instead of us telling what we actually believe, everybody should be somebody else and try and summarize their thoughts.
Ooh.
As to what's, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be Jeff then.
Right, okay.
I'm going to speak as Jeff starting in 3, 2, 1. Okay, so my favorite game of the year made me laugh, cry. It made me aroused. It made me de-aroused. It has an art style unlike any I've ever known. And I think it really, the thing about it is it's like my life. It's pretty much exactly my life, which I think is why I identify with it so much. And that would be The Binding of Isaac.
That is, came out in 2011, dude.
I know, me, but that didn't prevent me from spending an additional 250 hours with this game this year.
I think I might be up to 350 hours on that game. I recently, actually, it's interesting you mention that, because I recently got turned on to the idea of completely breaking the game and actually getting it to crash, which I've now done twice.
Whoa.
It's really cool. Love
that. I'm sorry to break that segment. Jeff, you should
next step speed runs. Frame perfect.
It's not a game that lends itself perfectly to speed runs, but I certainly have tried to get through quickly before. I mean, I can just talk about stuff that I played and stuff that I liked. And
no,
you guys,
you need to be somebody else and pretend to describe
your
game.
I'll try that. Okay, well, I can't be Jamie, so I'll be you, Griffin.
No, you can be Jamie, and I'll just be me or something.
That is cheating, you bastard. I have to look at your games list, Griffin, so I can find out exactly what you played.
Or you just ham it up.
I know what Griffin would say.
Well, Jamie, you just want to field this too? Like, this is...
Yeah, sure.
So, okay. Okay, go ahead, Jamie.
I'll field Griffin next. So I'll do Griffin, and then I'll do myself. Okay. So now I'm speaking as Griffin in 3, 2, 1. So my favorite game of the year, a game that made me laugh, cry, made me aroused, made me de-aroused, and really is just my life, it just hypifies my life, is Super Street Fighter 4 5Ds.
Okay, first of all, you are not drunk enough. And secondly, I already did that same thing in 2008 when I said that was like the greatest game ever created, and I was completely plastered on podcast air. But I think I said those as it typifies my life. 5Ds.
5 Geodesic Drift forever.
I'll do Axel now. Far Cry 3. Far Cry 3, guys. And then I'll do me, and I will say, was Dishonored this year?
Was Dishonored this
year? No, it was last year.
Last year.
Okay.
But there was DLC this year, so.
I didn't play.
No, Dishonored is obviously not my choice. My choice is obviously The Last of Us, obvious.
Yeah. I guess we're gonna
Yeah.
That seems so obvious, though. Like, obvious.
I know. I'm trying to think of other shit. Oh, wait. Ni No Kuni. Right?
Damn it. That was going to be my Jamie impression.
Griffin, I expect that you would have said you had a big affinity for Bioshock Infinite. I think it seems like you may have liked it the most out of all of us, although I know Jamie also really liked it.
I loved it.
And I enjoyed it, but maybe not as much as you do.
Yeah, sure. If I would go into like jerk mode and defend Infinite for sure. Yeah. I think that, but I also think that, like I said before, everything that has been said or that needs to be said has already been said about Bioshock Infinite. And it's like, hey, if you haven't been convinced to play that now, I probably can't do anything to convince you otherwise.
I think something that we probably all agree on is Fire Emblem. All of us played it and freaking loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Strategy game of the year.
Fuck yeah.
Reason to buy a 3DS pretty much.
Is it the 3DS game of the year? That, I think, is the interesting question.
What's its competition?
Animal Crossing and the Pokemon that hasn't been released yet.
This just shows how much I've lapsed as an Animal Crossing player.
And Luigi's Mansion.
That's true. I don't think... I like Luigi's Mansion a lot. I don't know if it... I think it's too niche. I think it's a cool game. It's a cool adventure.
For you
game.
Personally, like... What does Jeff think?
What does Jeff think? I think Luigi's Mansion is really cool. I love games that have a sense of humor, that are about making you laugh, as well as, you know, challenging you. And I think it definitely had a different pace and a different feel. I think if you're into something that's a little more lighthearted and a little more, brainy, it definitely was a lot of fun. I think you could probably skip it if you're just looking for the highlights of the year, even though it was a fun game.
Yeah.
One game that I really wanted to highlight that I know you played, Griffin, as probably one of my favorite games of the year was Antechamber.
Mm.
I freaking love that game. Did you ever play it, Jamie?
Yeah, I did. I love it too.
Yeah. So basically, I'll just give a quick summary of Antechamber. I think we've mentioned it on the podcast before. It's like a total. It's like Portal. Every puzzle game, every first person puzzler is like Portal these days. But it's kind of like Portal, except with like the mind fuck just like turned up to 11. And it's something. It does something that I think would only really work in a video game world, which is it convincingly like just fucks with physics and geometry.
Euclidean geometry.
Yeah, it's called the non-Euclidean puzzler. It like changes the rules of the real world in a convincing way, and it presents you with a new rule set that is consistent within the game world but does not reflect reality. And it's super cool, like experiencing the disorientation of coming into this new world with these weird ass rules, not really understanding that they're rules at first, just kind of experiencing chaos at first, and then sort of slowly becoming fluent in like the new language of the game and like learning to use it to your advantage. And I just think it's something really cool. I don't think it got, I know it did okay, but I don't think it got the attention that it deserves. And I think that it definitely does something that you can only, I mean, obviously. Yeah.
It's like a Metroidvania game, except you've had the missile tank all along. You just didn't know that you had it.
Exactly. Yeah. And only by, you know, gaining experience through traversing the world and interacting with the world, do you understand the full scope of your abilities. Do you understand the rule set? It's like, yeah, like you said, Griffin, like if you're speed running the game, critical pathing or whatever, you could probably break it you know, a bunch of different ways once you understand the logic of the world. Like there's like a door behind you when you first spawn that you don't even know about.
Right.
Yeah.
And like the game tricks you into jumping into a pit in the very beginning, and if you just walk, you can pass it.
Exactly.
But like there's all these cool little bits that really rely on you coming into the experience fresh and not understanding this world, having it not cohere with what you expect.
Yeah, I think the most like apropos analogy I can think of with that game of like you learn how to improve your play in it is where it's like Metroidvania where you have access to all these different areas, but you don't realize it until the game teaches you in the most subtle ways. And there is a moment when you're playing that game and you get into a room, and the room is like you ride an elevator. And you just got this new ability, and you're like, I can do anything right now. And you have this thing, and you're interacting with the world in a way that you're totally like feeling super powered. But the game like fucks you because it's like, yeah, you have this, but we're gonna put this treat right out of reach of you. Like you just cannot get to it, but you were inches close, and you're running through this puzzle, which is literally a loop. Like it's an elevator that goes up and down, and then if you fail it and you're back at down. You run back to up, you ride it, and then you fail it again. And then if you keep doing that enough, or if you're, you know, very aware of things and you see it right away, you see arrows that are pointing upwards as you're moving downwards. So you're like, what the fuck is with that? So you look upwards, and then as you're looking upwards as you're moving, it increases your velocity at the pinnacle. So now you have the ability to increase your movement range through something that you have had with you the entire time of your gameplay. You just had no idea that was something that would actually bear any effect on the game.
Yeah, I agree, Griffin. It does a great job of like subtly teaching you new mechanics. And there is a little bit of text that they threw in there with the signs that kind of, it's interesting because they sort of hint at what you have to do, but they're actually given to you after the fact, which is kind of like a slap in the face. Like, oh, you figured it out. Here's your consolation prize of this thing that would have told you exactly what you need to do. But it fits so perfectly with the game. Like, you're only going to find out what you have to do after you figure it out.
Right. Well, it's also really good too, because that game is weird. And it's like, I just walked backwards and fell into another room. Is that right? And there's a sign saying like, yeah, dude, that was right.
Yeah, so it's almost like you perform the skill. You're like, was that a fluke? And then it's like, hey, you're gonna use this again sometime. Remember this.
Mm. I just did one full run through right when the game came out with Shannon, and the only two things I remember from that game is the constant feeling of I'm a goddamn genius, and also like, and I love when a game can make you feel that way.
Yeah.
And also, I just remember there being like certain little optical illusion things that we would just stare at. Like we'd be in a room. And we just, instead of like trying to solve a puzzle or find our way out, we would just stare at things for long periods of time. And I love that kind of stuff.
Right.
Very atmospheric, very foreboding feeling, which is unique when all their palette is essentially like primary colors and very simple shapes.
Definitely, yeah. I was also going to say that it's the rare Metroidvania that like actually rewards exploration, because the puzzles are just so fucking cool that you actually want to see everything. Just to see what they're going to throw at you next. Whereas another Metroidvania is like, oh, I got to go back and get the fucking missile tank so I can 100% the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, I have to bring the speed booster to area one. And this, it's like, oh my God, if I go back to area one, I can find a crazy puzzle that's going to turn my whole understanding of the world upside down. And
I think part of that too is like, you know, you see that big map and you're like, dude, I remember that place. Fuck you, I could have solved this puzzle from the beginning. I just didn't know it. And I'm going to get back there and exact my revenge on this dumb room that's been mocking me.
I love the timer. You guys remember the timer?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then when it reaches zero, it's like, ah, fuck you. I love
that's
that.
That's amazing.
And that game is only accessible on PC, and I think it's only PC, right?
Yeah, I would say something that's characterized my gaming this year has been it's interesting because I'm kind of shifting back now, but at least in the beginning of the year, I was pretty heavily PC, like only. Just like crazy indie games on the PC, like Rogue Legacy. I know Jamie really liked that.
Yes.
You know, you got Anti-Chamber and you know, coming from last year, you had like FTL and stuff like that. Surgeon Simulator. Yeah. I put that on there. Did you ever get Surgeon Sim working, Griffin?
I did, yeah. With my new graphics card, I was able to play Surgeon Simulator.
I actually think that's a great game.
Yeah.
I think everyone should play it.
Yeah. I think here's my stipulation is, if you haven't seen video of Surgeon Simulator, like, you need to play Surgeon Simulator. If you've seen video of Surgeon Simulator, you probably shouldn't spend more than $2 on it.
Or if you're in med school and just feel that way all the time anyway in real life, then you don't need to play it.
Did you try it yet, Jamie?
No, I haven't tried it yet.
Oh, you really should.
But like I said, that's how I feel. That's how I'm going to feel tomorrow.
I guess so. I know that like Quap did it first, but I really think that there's something valuable in that game. You really got to give it a shot. Just to see, like, I don't know, something about having like a weird control system that's kind of fighting you. Just something about it was fulfilling for me. I don't know why. But
Octodad. I want to say something before I forget to say it, because I will. And that is that in 2013, I played the Tomb Raider game, and I really like that game. And I'm happy that it's getting a comic and probably a sequel. And I want to just quickly say some things about it that maybe I haven't already said. And that is, I think the game did a lot of small stress effects. I think the game did a lot of small things really well, and I wish it would have done them more. And I hope they do in the next game. And I hope some devs pick up on them. For example, in the first area in the game where it's a wider map and there are enemies on the other side and you're on, you know, the opposite side, when Laura runs out and takes cover, the enemies are like yelling, like, "We're going to get you, we're going to kill you, whatever." And she yells back across to them, but she sounds like such a wimpy little, like, nothing person, and that like kind of happens throughout the game.
You should play Spec Ops the Line.
Spec Ops the Line.
Yeah.
Okay, but the thing that I like,
dynamic voice acting is the best thing to happen in video games in the last year and a half.
Oh really? I'll definitely check that game out. The thing I like about Tomb Raider specifically in this regard, and I'll definitely have to check Spec Ops out, is that the acting is great, and you see over the course of the game very organically that she becomes a badass, and it just in this one little microcosm, just in what she yells across to the enemies, like, I think that's really cool. There are definitely things that game did poorly in terms of her becoming a badass, like her just walking away from a bear trap, but they did that good. It struck the perfect chord between linearity and openness to me. Like, I never was like, And it also did really good in terms of, like, I never felt like I was fighting too much. I never got bored of fighting. I never got bored of shooting. The second I think I would have gotten bored, bam, we're exploring or we're running and some buildings falling down.
So
and then the second
brilliant pacing.
Yes, pacing, exactly.
Yeah,
it's
that's important.
Amazing. The second that the building falling down got boring, I was doing something else. And the second that I'm sick of the main game, it says, hey, you can explore this optional cave now. You want to do that? If you don't want to, that's cool. Like, it was just really well laid out. Definitely could have been better in – I know, Griffin, I know you're concerned with it, and that's definitely an extremely valid concern, and it's a valid reason not to play the game.
What's the concern again?
The beating the shit out of her for no real reason other than to appeal to men's – right, Griff?
Yeah. It's my concern, my disdain for the game doesn't really exist anymore. Like, it is, I would love to play it so much, but I have stated implicitly that I will not play it because of the marketing behind it, which the developers and the marketing team behind it have said that we tried to make Laura more impotent to appeal to masculine gamers to protect her, and we're going to market that side of it. So I said, hell no. Just like I said when the Vita came out, I will buy this day one, and then because they said, well, hey, secret trick, memory cards cost a lot more. Now they dropped the price. Guess who owns a Vita?
I haven't bought Tomb Raider because I buy way too many other games, and I don't want to spend even more money.
Yeah. It's not like it's odd. It's not the kind of game that, even despite what I'm saying, and even despite the fact that I really loved it, I could like recommend, because it. Because at its core, it's just kind of like a shooty, explore-y kind of deal. You've seen it before. You've done it before. But there are little things that like I really hope they explore. And little story things, too. Like in the beginning of the game, you're running from someone that you're not entirely sure whether it's good or bad. You're stranded on this island. You're not sure if this is another person who's stranded on the island or like a bad guy on the island. And you're running away. And this mystery person who's yelling to you the entire time, please wait, I'm not going to hurt you. This mystery person gets crushed by a boulder. and then you never figure out whether they were good or bad. I like little shit like that.
That's
appeals
cool.
to me. Yeah. I don't know why.
I think that I don't know if it's just starting this year or recently, but it seems like towards the end of the generation, maybe because they kind of hit graphical plateaus, people started actually like paying attention to pacing, to you know, little flourishes, to like you said, Griffin, the sort of dynamic voice acting, just fleshing worlds out seems like something that has emerged a little bit more this year, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe that's something that I just haven't noticed before.
One last thing. I will shut up about Tomb Raider after this. That game, it's pretty much open world, and it is amazing at forcing you to really take your time the first time you visit a new location, and then arranging ways for you to get back and forth between older locations and the new location quicker than you did the first time. So it never feels like a slog, but you still get that visceral sense of accomplishment when you finally make your way up that mountain the first time. And then they set up ways for you to quickly go back and forth without using fast travel. You can use fast travel, but you don't have to. You can very organically go from place to place. I like that.
Very
so
cool.
That's it for that.
Okay.
Griff, do you want to talk about a game you like?
Yeah, I would love to. DMC Devil May Cry.
Nice.
I put a couple on the list here that were different from the other things that were on there because I'm just trying to flesh it out a bit. DMC Devil May Cry, I think, is a fantastic game if you like that action hack and slash stylish action game. Like, so it's basically like the way that I view it, and this is the only reason why I view it, is because it's how I view it. Okay, now that's not as stupid as it sounds. I have always liked the idea of Devil May Cry, but I've never liked playing Devil May Cry games. So when this new game came out and it was like, yo, it's Devil May Cry, but newer and better and by a different company, I was like, well, I'll give it a try. I ended up absolutely adoring it. Just completely falling in love with the gameplay, how fast-paced it was, how rewarding it was for combos, how exciting the pacing was, as Jamie said, which, and Jeff, you said too, is a great, great boon of this generation. Or late game generation, but it also does so many things that you know action games like that don't do, where it does a great job of like, okay, here's your enemy territory, and next here's your platforming territory, and now something fucking bananas that uses all the skills you've learned, which is really cool. Like, one of the things I absolutely hate in game design is when it's like you spend 6 hours learning, like, this is how you play this game, and then they upend the tea table and say, no, it's all different now. Now you can't dodge. And you're like, well, that's dumb. Like, what the fuck? I've just got really good at it. So this game definitely gets to that point and then pulls the rug out and is like, dude, you're going to fail, but it's, you've been doing this all along. You just didn't know it. And it has a lot of awesome moments of that in it. And If I want to say one negative side of it, like I've said before, it's like Anakin Skywalker, Hayden Christensen, acting like they mocapped him for everything. Like, it's okay. Really brooding and really angsty and really douchey. but it also really works. Like, if you're like me and you hate people who love Dante, then when they take Dante and they just take a big massive dump on him, and they're like, this is what he's been all along, fucker. You're just old now.
Like
I completely agree, Griffin. Yeah. I can't stand the Dante fanboys.
Yeah, but
old Dante looks dumb.
Yes, he looks dumb, and he is dumb. He is an anime character at best. But new Dante is at least has a bit of a personality and is super douchey and sucks a bag of dicks, but is totally cool for it. Like, and there's enough nods to people who know the Devil May Cry franchise and don't love it that it's like, yeah, I'm liking this. And they're like the twisted worlds that you go into where it's like, this is what it looks like in real life. And then this is what it looks like in the demon world. And everything's all like platformy and crazy and MC Escher painting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's super rad. I highly recommend it to anybody. And like I said, it works for me because I've always been interested in Devil May Cry. I've never liked Devil May Cry, but now I like Devil May Cry.
I'm in your boat, and you're making me want to play it. Because every time I would see the old Devil May Cry games, I'd be like, "Oh man, that looks awesome!" And I'd play it, and I'd be like, "No."
Yeah.
But this one, maybe I'll like this one more.
I guarantee you will. It is a ton of fun.
People were saying early in the year when it was getting reviewed at first that like PC was the place to play it.
Yep.
I don't remember why.
Positive.
But is that true?
Better frame rate. Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
I was going to say, I think Axel gave that to me for my birthday, so I should really play it.
Yeah. I mean, it's also fine on console if you end up going that route. Like, I played it on the Xbox 360, and it looked buttery. Buttery smooth.
Buttery.
Yep.
Nice.
But to actually take a step back here, and Jamie, I know I talked to Jeff about this after hours last week. But Spec Ops The Line, everything that you kind of said about Tomb Raider has been done in Spec Ops The Line. And funny enough that you bring that up, that was one of the games that I wrote about in my, hey, you should be playing this sort of thing that mm-hmm. prompted this discussion. It's one of the best. So the reason I put it on there was because it was a, hey, do you think games should be art? Okay, yes, play this game.
Like, really?
Yes. Like, our game's art, you play this game, and then now you have a better understanding. You need to play this game if you believe games are art.
Wow. That's high praise.
Yeah.
That is high praise, especially given I don't know anything about this game, except I'm staring at the cover art, and you're telling me this, and it's not meshing, and my brain is broken.
So, essentially, the underlying premise and the not so underlying premise of Spec Ops The Line is I'm a big dumb shooter, but I'm also critiquing every game design choice about big dumb shooters that have ever been made thus far in the genre.
I see.
But it's also not
my interest.
It's also not done in like a really ham-fisted way where it's like, oh, you know what sucks? Reloading magazines or moral choices or something. Like, If you play this game and you play it from front to back and you just kind of appreciate it as a FPS or a TPS, you can probably walk away from that and say, oh yeah, it was middling at best. Like, the controls were fine. Dudes died quick. It had some weird story things. You know, it hit all the major beats. But if you actually sit down and think about what you've been doing, actually, you don't even really need to think that hard, but if you especially after the ending of that game, like when you're finishing that up, it throws you this huge curveball that gives you that, like, what's the film called?
When Harry Met Sally.
Yes. There's the orgasm scene in the diner. No,
Usual Suspects?
No, what's the Metroid Prime trilogy? Metroid Prime
Citizen Kane
of video games. Right, that's, I've never seen Citizen Kane, but it's
Good movie.
The premises of Citizen Kane is like he is this bad dude all along, right?
It's more like people like debating over his legacy, right?
Have any of us seen the movie?
Yes, I've seen the movie. And I think the point of the... Well, I don't know if it's what you're going for, but I think the point of the movie is that who you aim to be and who you become are very different things.
That is 100% what this game is. And okay. By the end of the game, you look back on every decision you've made and you say, holy shit, I was the bad guy all along. Like, very, very much more black and white than The Last of Us. Like the moral gray areas don't really exist. It's more of like a BioShock thing where it's like, I have been led to believe this because video game design is this, and therefore by the end of it, now I'm thinking, oh fuck, Atlas was the publisher of this game, not somebody telling me what to do, or the developer of this game, not somebody telling me what to do.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
you've got me. It's $30 on Steam. I'm gonna play it after my next test is done.
I think it's free on PSN 30? Too.
Oh, for real?
It might be in the back catalog of free PSN Plus games.
If it is, nice. I'm definitely gonna grab it.
You need to. Like, it is. There are so many crazy moments in that game where you're just like, it's mindfuckery. And the coolest thing about it is, if you finish it, I highly recommend digging into as many archived interviews with the creators, because nothing is unintentional. And though, you know, art does not necessarily need intention, I think that it becomes even cooler when you listen to these half-hour interviews with people who are like, we never thought we could make a game like this. This was something that it was impossible. We were settled with this design doc, and this is what we did. And you thought that was weird? Well, here's things that are even weirder that we did, and now your mind is in fucking pieces on the floor, because it is literally that moment where you're like, the killer has been in the house all along. And you're like, fuck, no way. And you look back on everything that you did and everything that happened, you're like, son of a bitch, they're totally right. And it's just brilliant. And it's absolutely brilliant.
Awesome. I know a guy wrote a book on it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. Now I'm going to – I'm glad I jumped on this podcast, because that sounds like exactly the kind of thing that I like. And I don't mind – because I am also a fellow Infinite lover and BioShock lover in general, I can appreciate, of course, the subtlety of a game like The Last of Us, and I realize how important that is for games. But at the same time, I don't believe that subtlety is necessary to convey that type of message. I mean, Citizen Kane isn't subtle. Citizen Kane is like a giant fist made out of ham slapping you on the face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with that either. I would say that the issues I had with Infinite were different than that. So yeah, it sounds pretty sweet. I think you definitely did a good job of selling
it. The hardest hump to get over for the Spec Ops line is, like, Jamie, like you said, like the ham-fisted moments, but like the big, dumb action moments. Like, if you don't find, if there's not a little part of your brain that's like, I like playing video games and shooting dudes, like, you may find it hard to get through the game as a whole to experience the story. But if you're like, I've played shooting games where I like shooting dudes, and it's really just a good, easy thing to take my brain off and have a good time, like, it is absolutely the game to turn your brain on and analyze every little part of it and realize that shooters are fucking dumb and there's people that can do great things with it.
I like the shooters are fucking dumb part, but I might actually, it's interesting because I might actually struggle with the actual shooter part of it, because I just don't like shooters that much.
Sure, but there's also nothing wrong, like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with, like, turning it down to zero difficulty and just, like, barrel rolling through the story, because it doesn't matter. Like, the difficulty has no bearing in the story at large. It's you will getting to the end is more important than the moment to moment trials.
Gotcha.
That sounds pretty cool, man.
So you guys, I have to get up really early tomorrow. I'm gonna run, but I'm so happy I was able to jump on for a little bit, and I will. You guys keep going, and I will talk to you guys hopefully next week.
Yes,
fuck med school.
I know, right?
Go smell some wounds.
Gangrenous.
Gas gangrene. Bye, guys.
Right, bye, James.
We're all alone.
Good. Good.
It's better that way.
Jeff, do you want to talk about any other games that were, like, big bombs on your list?
Let me look real quick.
I know you wrote Lone Survivor. I'm curious about that since I know nothing.
I will talk about Lone Survivor. So Lone Survivor came out in 2012, so it's kind of cheating, but it's coming to Vita and PS3 in 2013, in a couple weeks, and it's going to be a greatly enhanced port. Jasper Byrne, the guy who made it, put in like an extra year of work on it. So I'm calling it fair game for game of the year territory. I would say Lone Survivor. I mean, it's a game that hasn't. I mean, it definitely was successful, but it hasn't really gotten a lot of attention. It's one of those games. First of all, it's made by one guy, and that's always going to be appealing to me. you know, we're talking, you know, one person just pouring his heart and soul. Clearly, you know, the huge emotional toll that this game took on him is like worn on the game's sleeve. It is very much. It's basically it's very much in the vein of Silent Hill. It's a horror game. Very psychological. Very, you know, mind fucky. It's got like a 2D low res look to it. There wasn't any one thing about it that has like never been done before. But for me, it is like the indie game that is the most, I guess, the most compelling case for indie games existing. Yeah. Like it's got like a really interesting narrative that you just wouldn't see anymore in like AAA development. Very experimental. This guy used to be a musician by trade. The music is amazing. He did all of the tracks. He did the instruments for all of them. Some freaking awesome guitar, some jazz, some really cool stuff. The atmosphere is incredible. It's a scary, moody game. He's a Western guy, but it has a very Eastern feel to it.
Does this game have like a shot from a hand cam sort of aesthetic to it?
It's heavily pixelated, which, you know, some people see as lazy, but it actually you can tell how much work went into it, and it's very low res. And I think that was done to make the enemies more menacing, more or less. Right. I mean,
you don't want to see Jaws; you want to see the shadow.
Exactly.
Of Jaws.
Yeah, and a lot of times you're just kind of creeping around in near or total darkness, and like managing, you know, this is something that's come up in a lot of games like Amnesia and the like. Managing your light is like a major thing, and you're very weak against the enemies, which is of course very important in a horror game. But it's just very psychological, and the narrative is not it's not like a super easy narrative. Like you don't really know exactly what happened in the end. You don't really understand what is going on with the main character, but it's just a really solid indie game, made by one guy, by an amazing music, really cool plot, just something you wouldn't see anywhere else. And I'm so excited to see it coming to Sony platforms, coming to consoles. For me, it's like I said, I started the year kind of pretty down on consoles, kind of very much in the PC sphere. But as the indies have started to migrate back to console, it's kind of sucked me back into the console world a little bit. And it's getting me excited for the next generation again. And that game is like one that really, along with like Spelunky and things like that, but that game especially really kind of sucked me back over to consoles. So I'm excited to see something like that come to consoles.
Cool.
So that's really all.
It's a scary game though, so I probably won't play it.
It's scary, but I can't play Amnesia. I tried, and I just can't do it.
Yeah, me.
I could play Lone Survivor all the way through.
All right.
It is very unsettling, but it is rarely like, oh my fucking god, I'm gonna die.
Not like sweating awful, terrible stink sweat, and like, you know, just wanting to be around people suddenly.
You'll have to see. It definitely requires a little bit of stealth too, which maybe you don't like. Like you're definitely on the edge of your seat dealing with monsters, but they're like known quantities. Like it's like, oh, there's a monster over there.
Do you play Dead Space games at all?
I've never played a Dead Space
game. Okay. Well, never mind then. I was going to try and compare to that, but.
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, no. Are the monsters known presences in those games, or do they jump out?
Yes and no.
Okay. This is definitely more like the known presence territory. Like,
okay,
there's a guy over there. If I stay here, I'm safe. Although you're slowly, this is actually another really cool piece. You're like slowly losing your mind, and you have, it actually incorporates a lot of like light sim elements. Like you have to eat, you have to sleep. And if you don't, you go crazy and it affects your ending.
Huh.
And like your character will like say weird shit or start to behave differently. So there's a lot of really cool stuff going on. It's definitely worth checking out.
Does the craziness getting ever in, does it ever hinder your gameplay?
It never, I'm trying to think. I don't think it ever makes it harder. The only thing that can happen is that if you run out of resources, you can like literally have a breakdown.
Okay.
And you wake up in your bed later. Huh. And have some unseen negative effect on your ending, but not on the gameplay itself.
Yeah. I just think it'd be really fascinating if somebody decided to make like a Skyrim style, totally immersive game. But you had to manage kind of your sanity in it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of like completely spelling it out to the player that you were getting progressively stupider and crazier, mm-hmm. like if it was done a really subtle fashion, so when you hovered your cursor over Apple, it was like just misspelled in a really stupid way. And then by the end of it, it was like, no, you just choked in vomit and died in your bed one night. Like, and it was just this most like completely unintrusive insanity function that was happening in the background that you just probably weren't noticing, because if you're crazy, you probably wouldn't notice it anyway.
That would be really awesome. Yeah, I wouldn't say this game delivers on that, but you definitely, your character will behave differently in like dialogue moments and things like that.
Okay.
In response to their sanity. But no, you definitely don't get gameplay tweaks. I feel like Bethesda took a shot at that with Fallout, like with like radiation poisoning and stuff, but they did not go anywhere near far enough.
Right. Well, in their older games, or sorry, not in Bethesda's, but in like the Black Rock Studios, like Fallout 1 and 2, like you would be locked out of certain dialogue choices, or you would have certain dialogue choices based on your intelligence or your radiation levels. The only reason why that was important was that was your only way of expressing that in those games.
Yeah. Well, you saw that in Fallout 3 and New Vegas as well. I think probably to a greater extent in New Vegas. But yeah, I mean...
But I think dialogue was less important in those games than it was in Fallout 1 and 2.
That's probably true. And I think we can do better. We can do better than that.
Right. You can shoot Three Dog in the head and continue your game. Bow wow.
Yeah. So that would be really cool. I'm hoping, you know, with the advent of more powerful hardware, we see that kind of subtle changing.
That's right. What's Dennis Dyack up to right now?
I think he's still pushing hard for Shadow of the Eternals.
He's asking Major Nelson a lot of questions on NeoGAF.
Poor guy. I think he's permabanned, actually, Dyack.
I think you're right, yeah.
I feel for the guy. I feel like he got a bad rap. He'll probably never be attached to a game anymore.
You and I talked about his most recent stuff, right?
Shadow of the Eternals?
Yeah.
I don't know if we ever actually broached it on the show.
Well, all I wanted to say, if I hadn't told this to you, but before I said, have you ever seen that video like of the Today Show where they like put the cupcakes in front of the dog's face and the dog just has like the 1,000-yard stare and doesn't eat the cupcakes?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, if you go look that up, or if you've ever been on the internet before and have seen that. I felt like that was how Dennis Dyack acted in the most recent video interviews with him, where he's like, yeah, I fucked up in my past, but moving forward, I'm a different person now. I'm trying to take in criticism and not take it personally, and I want to move into a new venture, and I want to, you know, support my team. And it just reminds me of like the 1,000-yard dog stare cupcake of like, this is not the man we've known before, and
there's something hiding behind that veneer.
Right. Like this is exactly. It is a glazed over Dennis Dyack that is, it is not, he's not there.
There's an empty husk.
Right.
The real Dennis Dyack is like a malevolent Dyack spirit. Yeah, like I was going to say, the real Dennis Dyack is like some spiritual being floating in the ether.
Yeah.
Like deep in the bowels of NeoGAF's right. servers or something.
Yeah, he's the entity. He's the psychomantis that's been inhabiting these other bodies over the course of years.
Very possibly.
Do we want
to? Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do we want to say any other games before we?
I wanted to talk about Blood Dragon, which I haven't played yet, but you put it down, and I think you, I'm hoping you put it down for. Well, I feel like it's worth having on that list, even though I haven't played it. But you should talk about it, because you did, right?
Well, I put it on the list because I wanted to make a list of diversity, and also because we've talked it on here, we've talked about it here before with Axel. Played Blood Dragon is all I have to say, is fucking play Blood Dragon.
Yeah, well, I think something that's cool about that game, which I just wanted to say, which is obvious, I guess, but it's a pretty cool model for, yes, like how to make a independent-ish AAA game.
Or how to do DLC in the current day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would love it if you know, Ubisoft used the Far Cry engine to make a bunch of little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be freaking awesome.
Yeah, and it was.
Hopefully we see more of that. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we see more of that in the coming years, because I think it's a really great idea.
Right.
To make like little mini games using existing engines, recycling assets if need be.
Yep.
You know, it's
Blood Dragon was kind of the perfect storm, where it's like, you know, you take a system that is defined really well through Far Cry 3, an amazing game that is fantastic, but you take that same kind of gameplay logic and design, and you apply it on a very, very small scale, and you inject a ton of self-referential humor, and you twist the world in just a way to fit that tone and make a bunch of jokes, you know, in that vein too. And you also make it super cheap.
Yeah, and you make it not require the base game. So yes, I will buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely really smart, and I'm really hoping, if that's one way to you know, to recoup the development costs on your engine or allow creative freedom at a huge place like Ubisoft, I'm really excited about that. Like, if someone wants to use the Watch Dogs engine to make like a non-combat, you know, like a story game or something, that's fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm all for more of that.
Right. Just walking around on your phone, don't bump into people.
just a press X to Jason.
Yeah.
The long form game.
I think that Blood Dragon, the way that I try and, if I were to pitch that, I would say it is a game that if you like shooty uppy video games, and you also liked G.I. Joe, and more importantly, the G.I. Joe PSA spoof PSAs, that you will love it. Like, if you're like, if you know what like stop all the downloading means, or pork chop sandwiches, like if any of those things resonate for you, then this is the game to go play this year, because it's super cheap, super fast, super fun, and also really big and dumb and goofy.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
You know, there's, you click a button and you give people a middle finger on your robot arm. Like, hello.
That's awesome. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, again, you know, I'm hoping that model gets used more, because it's a really cool model.
For sure.
You haven't really seen much of it before. So.
Yeah. And it's also really cool to listen to developer interviews when the dude who made it was like, it is exactly what I wanted. It is spoofing 80s RoboCop garbage and bad B movies, but also wrapped around awesome game design and you know, just like fun.
Just
great.
Yeah. It's freaking awesome. That makes me really like Ubisoft a lot more. So, is that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, there's not really anything else on my radar. I mean, you had Ni No Kuni down here, and that's a freaking awesome game.
Yeah. I was going to say, well, Ni No Kuni is simple. It's like, I have an article that is like a third of the way written, but I never got through it. It's basically like, do you think JRPGs are dead? Well, you're wrong. Here's Ni No Kuni, basically, is my example. But I was going to talk about Last of Us, because you put that on the list, and I think it's an obvious choice for the year.
Yeah.
But what I'm terrified about is Grand Theft Auto.
Interesting.
Because right now, in my mind, you know, I think I'm looking at the year as a whole, and I'm saying, oh, what's game of the year discussion going to be? It's going to be super boring and monotonous, and everybody just saying, well, obviously it's going to be The Last of Us, and there's maybe another two games here and there that were really good but can't stand up. Somebody will make an argument, but it's like, no, really, you know, whatever you're saying doesn't compare with The Last of Us. What I'm really, really nervous about is GTA coming out and then people like critics and fans and just game players in general overhyping this stupid hunk of garbage and and blowing it out of proportion, just like GTA 4 was, and us totally missing Metal Gear Solid 4. I mean, The Last of Us.
I think that even if, you know, fucking whatever, IGN is like, oh, GTA 5, I mean, they already filleted it in some recent video preview or whatever, or like a written preview. Even if the takeaway from the big sites is like, oh, you know, GTA 5 is the game of forever, I feel like Sony's not going to stop doing stuff like The Last of Us. I don't feel like it's in any danger, even if it doesn't get the highest accolade.
Right. You're right. Right. But what I'm worried about...
I understand
about,
the emotional.
No, I'm... What my worry is, okay, yet again, we praise Rockstar and GTA for doing something that isn't that interesting. Like, it is the biggest fucking fireworks show that has ever existed when it's only a goddamn bottle rocket in the sky. Like, there is really nothing here. It's just in this vacuum and different and has a great name behind it. But really, like, there's way better things that are happening.
Yeah. And I agree. I mean, but look at every other award show. You know, the best movies don't win Oscars.
No, you're right. I'm just saying, like, I want to stop rewarding Rockstar.
Yeah. Also, they're kind of assholes to the people they employ and stuff.
Well, yeah. It's just GTA 4 pissed me off so much because I don't think it was a good game.
I mean, I haven't really played it enough to judge, but I've heard complaints about it, and it's not something that's ever really interested me. It looks kind
of
bland.
Well, it is the most highly reviewed game of all time and is, you know, measurably the greatest game that has ever come out. So it makes me very upset that is a thing, and I'm just really nervous this is going to happen again with GTA 5. I understand, like, you somebody loving GTA. I totally get that mindset.
Yeah,
but what made GTA 4 so good, I think, was completely lost in the shitstorm that is GTA that they haven't actually ever been able to clean up. Mm-hmm. And that really pisses me off because it's like when you find that diamond in the rough or, like, you know, not piece of shit in this giant fucking shit pie of a game, and then you say that is the greatest thing ever created, and then there's way better stuff that has happened this year. Like, it just makes me so upset where it's like, hey, no, look at The Last of Us. That game was great. Like, this game is okay at best.
I don't know. I feel very optimistic. I feel like things are different than they were then. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're just going to see this regression. Maybe people are just going to go for GTA because it came out recently.
Right.
But it seems like things are different. And I think, I guess what you seem to kind of be getting at is, like, you want to see progress in the medium.
Well, no, it's mostly like, it's like saying, like, no, fuck Jonathan Taylor Thomas. He was never hot. Like, look at this dude who is in Three Ninjas. Like, he's got Colehead was the fucking shit, man. Like, he's got karate skills and has been way better all along. And fucking JTT is just doing his Lion King garbage and wearing his dumb bowl cut hair. And he's a piece of shit and everybody loves him and he sucks. But look at this guy who's way cooler and has been here this entire time as this guy. And they're like the same things, but one's way better.
Is Game of the Year like the girl that got away?
No,
I feel like there's like a Taylor Swift song about this.
it's just like PTSD. Like, it's like, fuck, man, GTA just ruined 2008, I think. And 2008 was the greatest game for video games of this generation. So
it feels like other than IGN, like, I don't know, like, people, I guess, are excited about GTA, but it seems like it's been a little more muted than GTA 4 was. I remember the hype for GTA 4 being unreal. And I don't really see a ton of GTA 5 hype on, like, the enthusiast sites. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right there, but I think on Joe Call of Duty, like those are the people that are like, dude, GTA motherfucker.
I mean, those people are not, you know, ultimately when you come down to it, they're not really like us.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, but I know that, you know, it sucks that those people are missing out on a better opportunity to play games.
I agree. And it sucks that, you know, The Last of Us is going to do, several million, and GTA is probably going to do, you know, let's say 20 million.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is, you know? But right. I think instead of looking at it like it's such a shame that The Last of Us isn't going to outsell GTA, you should say, like, it's such a great thing that, you know, this is what you could usually expect for something like this, and it went so far above what one might expect it to do.
Jeff, I won't be happy until GTA is dead in a fucking pile next to E.T. in the Las Vegas, Sierra, whatever, in the
Sam
fucking
Houser.
Desert. Yeah.
We'll have to see how this new one does. It looks pretty cray. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand. Everyone has that thing that they just hate.
I'm so scared. I don't want people to like GTA 5.
Griffin, let it go.
Okay.
No, I think it's just it's natural to fanboy about something like that, or fan rage.
I think this is my one biggest thing, though. It's like GTA just pisses me off so much.
Hey, I like GTA 3. That was a fun game. I had a great time playing that game.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Like a solid 2 weeks of fun.
Yeah. I don't deny that GTA games aren't fun, but I think that what they are praised for now is no longer their fun factor. Mm-hmm. It is this, like, serious storytelling, like, HBO special sort of video game experience that's happening with it. And
It's not what you want for games. Right?
No, it is what I'm totally cool with it for games. I just don't think it's done as well as people claim it to be. Like, imagine if you watch Breaking Bad, but half of the episodes were about dude main character just stabbing people in the fucking eyeballs, or you know, going to porn shops and having people spit stupid ass puns at him.
Okay, like, so it's like it's fine. Nothing wrong with it, but it's not at the top of its field. You want recognition to go to something better that doesn't just have the name attached to it.
Yes.
I see.
If you're gonna praise something for its immersive quality and its adherence to very mature storytelling and game design that's surrounding that, then how come I can drive my car on the wrong side of the road, murder a bunch of people, shoot a bazooka at my feet and shoot and fly thousands of feet in the air, and then go up to my cousin and be like, I just want to find a better life here in America. I don't want to have old life. I want to have good new life. And it's like,
that is, just murdered like 10 prostitutes.
To me, GTA, like I've said this before, GTA 4 is the definition of, you know, gameplay to narrative dissonance.
Narrative dissonance. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I would suggest that you do not visit, you know, like your ABC.com towards the end of the year then, or your NBCs or whatever,
right?
Because you may be disappointed there. But I think, I don't know, I feel like the people who are highly literate in games and look for the kind of shit that we do are infiltrating, even like the New York Times wrote about The Last of Us glowingly, you know, like
I don't care about the big news agencies stuff. It's the enthusiast crowd that's like, dudes, really? Like, dudes.
I think the people whom you care about are already in your camp, and the people who make the purchasing decisions, like the bros, are never gonna fully come around. But the fact that they even batted an eye at it is good in its own right. And I think they did. I think there was a lot of, you know, that was like a big part of the cultural whatever, zeitgeist or whatever, for a long time. So I think any time that GTA is doing well and people are buying it and bros are talking it up and you go to the game store and, you know, like you said, Joe Call of Duty is buying it, just remember the moments when bros were talking up The Last of Us and try to get through it.
I think that GTA may be the Final Fantasy of this generation, this not like console generation, but like life generation, like, you know, where it's like 10 years down the road, you know, kids are going to be sitting at the game store being like, well, my favorite GTA was Vice City. Oh, yeah? Well, my favorite GTA was San Andreas. Well, you know, they all went bad after GTA 5 because that was just when it fucking, like, sold out for shit. Oh, wait, you ever hear about their secret project? Yeah, little known fact, Red Dead Redemption. Actually, it was, like, the secret GTA game that the real GTA team made. And it's like the gamer discussion, the polarizing gamer discussion that's always existed of like what Final Fantasy is the best Final Fantasy will exist, but now it's in the frame of like GTA, which is the best GTA.
FF9.
And the truth is, they've never been that great.
Are just you like Final Fantasy. Final games. Fantasy has never been that great.
Yeah, kind of.
I'm so sad.
Well,
you don't
okay.
say that about my baby.
No, but I'm saying, like, you know, if you want to get into, like, the what child would you not murder? Like, is it really worth discussion in that vein?
I mean, they're overhyped. They're overhyped, and they've got issues. And you wish those issues would be acknowledged and punished.
Are you talking about Final Fantasy or GTA?
Final Fantasy games have a ton of issues. I fucking love them, though.
Yeah, me too.
I think, unabashedly think they're amazing and would love for some more of them.
That's why I'm saying that I think that this is going to be the same thing with GTA, where it's like, you know, I'm ready for the next one. It looks so good. Oh, fuck me.
I feel like before the next, like, I feel like given how long it took for GTA 5 to come out and how much money was poured into it, they're just going to bankrupt themselves making the sixth one. Let's be real here.
I think they got two more in them until it gets to that level. Yeah,
all their money.
Yep.
I don't think they manage themselves very well over there.
I don't know. I don't know how it works at 2K. It seems like a totally awesome place to work. So yeah, you're probably right. It's probably not managed very well.
What I think it's who? I don't think Rockstar does a very good job, or something like that, or Take Two, or whatever. There's so many companies affiliated with the various stages of production in that game. I can't keep them straight, but. I know there is some issues with money and management over there, for sure. Specifically around GTA.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt with that being their cash cow, you know, it's just, hey, do what you need to do to make that fucking light, to trap that lightning in the bottle.
Yeah. So we shall see. I mean, you will have plenty of opportunity to complain about it because it's coming out in, what, 2 weeks?
1 week?
Yeah.
1 week.
So... Maybe I'll buy it just to spite you.
No!
I'll be like, yo, bro, you hear about this new game, GTA 5? You can replace three dudes at once?
I can't think of the opposite. I can't think of something that somebody can do to really annoy me with a game like that. Like, the only thing I think of it right now is, like, when that person goes out on the midnight launch and, like, buys the Super Collector's Edition and then just, like, snaps the disc in half and throws it away. The video that would really annoy me would be, like, you going into the garbage and like gluing it back together and trying to play it.
Did you hear how Sam Hauser?
It's like the dog eating its own barf.
I was gonna say, did you hear how Sam Hauser apparently was defending the game? Someone was like, "Oh, how come there's no female leads?" And he was like, "The core of the game's narrative is about machismo." So that's why there's three male leads.
Well, you know, Brucey was one of the greatest characters ever created in 2008. So, yeah, you know, machismo is what sells to people.
Just the answer he gave was really hilarious.
Yeah.
I think you would, as someone who wants to have an axe to grind or has an axe to grind with GTA, I think you would find it amusing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Axe to grind or detest bullshit. One of the two. Yep.
Well, no, I mean, it's a legitimate axe. I mean, it's got some issues for sure.
Yeah.
And I have no interest in the fourth or the fifth game, so I'm really with you. I just am not as passionate about it.
Okay,
well, I'll save my passion for some other, probably even more obscure thing that's like silly beyond belief.
Dragon's Tears: The Storybook Saga Part 2. Didn't that come out this week?
I believe it did. It came out yesterday, I think, and I know that Dale North did the music for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did all the music.
Oh, I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, he makes the songs. Cool guy.
All right. Well, yeah. Is there any other games that people should check out from 2013 before the end times cometh?
Let me see what I got written down here. You still with me, Griff?
Hello.
Okay. I freaking love Runner 2. I mean, you know, that's probably the best run I've ever played. So if you like runners at all, even if you don't like runners, if you like rhythm games or runners, then play it. If you don't like those games, then probably don't play it. But it is a great game, and it has so much charm and character.
Go listen to last week's episode if you want to hear more about Runner 2. We did get into it quite a bit there.
Yeah, we did. Rogue Legacy, I touched on. It's a great game. If you like roguelikes, roguelikes are my crack, so that is a great game.
Yeah. Or if you're like me and you're just okay with waiting for it to come out on the Vita.
That's perfectly great, too, because every friggin' indie ever is coming to Vita. Gunpoint, I talked about that before. Great little indie game. A lot of fun to traverse the world in your ultra-jumping pants and use your hack tool to rewire shit. All
right.
You feel smart. Let's see. Anything else? That might be it for me. Yeah, I'd say that's it. You know, other than the usual suspects, I put Guacamelee on here, but you know, that's just a fun game.
Yes, it is. So. Yet another Metroidvania that is totally fucking awesome.
Yes, definitely.
For different reasons.
Yes. The actual fighting part of it is a lot more fun.
Yep, and it's got a freaking rad soundtrack.
Yes. And cute little memes.
Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it on my end. You have anything you want to add to the list of games you should check out?
Shadowrun Returns. If you're looking for an action game, or I guess I should say a tactical action game, top-down thingy that's all about cyberpunk bullshit. I don't know. It's cheap. It's for PC and Mac and...
got a bitchin' level editor, so I hear.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I've kind of dropped off that side of the information for it, but the main game itself is a ton of fun. It's still getting patched. It's cheap. If you like tactical games, like you know, like a Fallout game or a Final Fantasy Tactics or whatever, or XCOM, it takes cues from all of those things, and I highly recommend it, and it's a 100% Kickstarter success. So you know, go check that shit out.
We should just take the since Jamie's gone, we should just dump on Double Fine Adventure.
Yeah, fuck that game. You watch those developer diaries? No, me either. Yeah, fuck that shit.
I haven't watched a single one. I pretty much blindly gave money to that. To be honest, I think Jamie was like super hyped about it, and I was like, yeah, okay,
yeah.
I don't really care either way.
Right. I was kind of in that same boat. I was like, man, okay. Whoops.
What the hell?
Yeah.
This looks fun.
Yeah. Let's see. I can tell you things that you probably shouldn't play this year right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Don't play God of War Ascension or Gears of War Judgment, because neither of those are great games, which I'm sure most people already know.
Fourth games in the series farmed out to other studios for both of them.
Yep.
Both sold abysmally.
Yep. Don't play Remember Me.
Remember not to play.
Yep. What else do I have on this list here? This is where it gets kind of complicated. And I kept this one off the main list just because I knew it would create some contention. But don't play Metal Gear Solid, or don't play Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. That game's not that great.
I liked it. I think I am too dumb to play good, or like really complex and involved Kamiya games, and it came at a good time for me. So I would add the caveat, if you want to do the same mindless sword slashing over and over and you don't care if it gets more complicated or interesting, just want to cut a lot of dudes up and not have to think too much, then go ahead and play it. But otherwise, maybe not. There probably are better action games out there.
Yeah, and there are, especially if you're looking at it as like, this is a game I want to finish and experience the entire depth of story with, because no. First of all, there is a super steep learning curve that just jumps off the charts towards the end of the game. Like, stupid difficult. And then secondly, it's buried under piles and piles of delicious horseshit that is Metal Gear lore.
I had a great time with the horrible story, to be honest.
Oh,
but
me
I was
too.
Kind of zoning yeah. out.
So, I love anything that's Ghost in the Shell ish.
For whatever reason, it was really pushing my buttons. Right. I was loving it. Right. I loaned it out to Jamie, and he still got it. I haven't finished it yet, but
I do detest the storytelling of it, where it's like, "Hey, hard pause here."
Yeah,
you fucking stand and listen to a dude talk to you.
You can walk really slow.
Yeah, that is not good game design.
That's fucking annoying. But I had a great time with it, so I would definitely put a caveat in there and just say, if you want something mindless and you're ready to laugh at a really hilariously bad story and you think robots look fucking cool, then go ahead and buy it on sale.
Yeah, perfect. I say don't play it. It's dumb as shit. Jeff, you say play it. It's dumb as shit. Like,
exactly.
That is great. Yep.
That's a great way to say it.
Yeah.
What else you got on there?
Boy, list as a whole, I mean, not a lot of things I can try and sell. You know, Injustice was a great fighting game this year. If you like comic book stuff, and I didn't, I don't really want to get too much into that. Dead Space 3 was a bunch of poopy. It was not a good Dead Space game or game in general. We played a lot of Dragon's Crown. Had a great time with that, I'm sure.
I would say it's a little niche. It was really fun. I'd be happy to finish it up sometime. Yeah. I don't know if you did.
We should
finish it sometime then, just to put the star next to it. But if you really like beat 'em ups and you like looting and you want to play multiplayer in a kind of unconventional way with your PSN friend, then I think it's worth grabbing. There's some not so great elements, but there is a cooking mini game.
Oh, it's awesome! And it's so good.
So many boobies.
Yeah, and butts. Boobies and butts.
Huge butts
and giant ball sacks.
that was a great game.
The last game that I was going to say, two things I was going to say actually is, anybody who says Anarchy Reigns is a good game is a fool. So ignore any of your online message board posts that say anything positive about that, because it is a fucking flaming tire fire. Like, don't go there. And then lastly, where was I looking here? Oh, I played Evil Land, and that was fine.
Yeah, it looked okay.
Yep.
Can you just tell me really quickly, what is Anarchy Reigns? I remember the title, but I don't know anything.
It's a single-player MOBA that sucks
lot. That's weird.
It's a beat-em-up brawler MOBA that's single-player only, that has fighting game elements in it. But it also, that's made by Platinum, so it's just big and bravado and dumb and fucking awesome character design, but just it goes on all the bad side. It's essentially like the Jekyll and Hyde, or like I don't really know how to put it. Like, it is the complete opposite of anything good that you can take from a Platinum game. We're like, well, yeah, it's got great action, and though it may be kind of a dumb story, you know, it has so many good things going for it. Like, this is like, yeah, it has the idea of good combat, it has the idea of interesting gameplay, but it never follows through on any of it. And it's all just like horse trash, fucking, you know, concept bullshit, totally uninteresting.
That sucks.
Yeah, and you're fighting waves of enemies to get to the next challenge, which is 100% uninteresting. You complete that challenge, and it's like some super character fights you, and then you don't give a shit because it's dumb as hell, and you just trap them in the corner somewhere, and they die. And you're like, well, I don't really even know how the health bar system in this game works anyway, so fuck it.
Well, all right then. That's a ringing endorsement if I've ever heard one.
Anarchy Reigns, best menu.
What's that?
Anarchy Reigns has the best menu.
Why is that?
It's just, check it out. Like, the opening menu is the best menu.
Okay, will do. I was going to say, we didn't mention Dive Kick, but I feel like everyone should buy that game.
Yeah, I think that's fresh enough right now that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have to say anything else, but just everyone should buy it.
Yeah, go check out the video awesome. If you haven't.
Definitely.
Yep.
Hey, Saints Row 4. What would you say about that game? Stay away, buy it, buy it with conditions.
Buy it with conditions. Like I said on weeks before, it's not a game for everybody. It's a game for Saints Row fans, and it will be better appreciated by people who have played Saints Row 3, mm-hmm. Which is really easy to do right now, so you may as well. But it's also hitting at this really weird time where I feel like if you play Saints Row 4 and then you're a game player, a person who plays games, a gamer.
I hate that word, yeah.
Yeah, me too. you may find GTA completely unplayable because of the traversal abilities that you get in Saints Row 4. So,
I'm surprised you wouldn't recommend Saints Row 4 to everyone then.
Yes, play it. Best game ever. GTA greatest unplayable. game of the life.
I also wanted to quickly ask about Splinter Cell Blacklist. I know we touched on it, but tell me about that just briefly.
I played it for like 40 minutes and just fell asleep essentially.
Okay. So yeah. Just completely mediocre.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 100%. Like, I really, really had a good time with Splinter Cell Conviction. Because it was a lot more fast-paced Splinter Cell that wasn't so fucking punishing than the Splinter Cell games before, where it's like, oh, if you break stealth, you're fucked, and you're just going to get shot, and everything's over, and you don't have to sit and wait, and you can be very predatory in your stealth. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that is kind of back in this game, but it's also neutered quite a bit. And you're also very fragile, and the enemies are very smart, and it does require a lot of like classic stealth elements.
Gotcha.
So as I was going through the beginning of that game, even in the first two levels, I was like, yep, going back here, that'll work for people who aren't me. Fine. This is a
I
game.
Feel like as someone who enjoys stealth gameplay, I should maybe give it a shot just to get a perspective on it. Because some of the Let's Players I sometimes watch really like it.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I don't know. Maybe I look into that. Maybe that's 100%. One of those caveat games.
Okay, and then the other thing that's really dumb about me is like I was playing that game and it's like it's so dark. Like everything is
like visually.
Yes, like okay. Not like oh man, he just slid his wrists to Sam Fisher like down a glass of whiskey and cut his wrists open because it's the only way he can feel, and he lost his daughter and his wife. No, it's like. I can't fucking see shit because your game is too goddamn dark.
Can you just play with the gamma?
Yeah, I play with it, but it's like it's still fucking dark.
All right, I gotta check this out. I wanna maybe later in the year during the drought, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, cool. Anything else that was on your radar this year?
Nope, that's more than I expected to talk about. So everything else on that list there, I think I have extolled in different. Podcasts and whatnot enough to make it apparent that those are big enough deals.
Yeah, I had a couple other things on here. I had Mario and Luigi. I've kind of already touched on that. I think it's one of the more mediocre Mario and Luigi titles.
Yeah,
definitely doesn't come up to the level of the third one.
Yeah,
I think that pretty much covers everything I played. So
yeah, cool. Like you had said before, though, like one of the best games I played this year was FTL, and that was a game from last year. So,
yeah, I love that game.
Fucking yes, FTL is a great game. Yep.
Yeah, and I've been playing a butt ton of Spelunky, and I feel like even though that's a 2012 game, it got a new life on the PC. And if you are engaged at all with like people who stream on Twitch, which is kind of a dark area, but people who have like an internet presence and play, the daily challenge is like a really fun thing right now that people are streaming, and being a part of that is really cool.
Sure. So, and most importantly, yeah, if you haven't played Spelunky yet,
you need to rectify that.
To it. Yeah. There is a way for you to play it right now, so go get it.
Yeah. I think PC is preferred platform just for the daily challenge. I think that's a really cool community element, but if you got to get it on your PS3 or you know whatever, then by all means, it is worth playing.
Xbox, Vita, whatever you want, it's there.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was going to say, I kept forgetting to touch on this on the last episodes, and I don't have anything to say after this. Too is just fuck Wake Up Club.
I haven't played it yet, actually. Should I join the Wake Up Club?
Join my Wake Up Club. No, okay. Fuck Wake Up Club. Because it's the... Okay, so Wake Up Club. It's an application for the PlayStation Vita that you download, and it's essentially an alarm clock, right?
Yeah.
But how it's ideally supposed to work is like it ties you in with other people in your quote-unquote area who wake up at the same time you do, and you have to engage in a quote-unquote mini game to shut the alarm off, which helps you to wake up.
Okay.
And get out of bed, which, you know, it's a cool idea. Like, you know, yeah. I'll hit my snooze alarm when I wake up because I'm like, fuck it, meh. But Wake Up Club, like, the alarm goes off, you pick up the Vita, you have to poke, your icon a couple times on the screen as it's, like, fluttering around, and then it's like, oh, you're up now. Congratulations.
I find a good solid rear touch always get me going in the morning.
Always in the morning. But it fails to surface who on your list is real and who is just like computer AI.
Oh.
And it also is the most poorly designed application because to make it function, you need to have it as your primarily running application on your device when you go to sleep. So
multitasking.
Imagine, okay, listener, dear listener, if you have a Android or iOS based phone or something, imagine if the only way for your alarm clock on your phone to work would be is if you pulled up the alarm clock application, had that as your like front end application. That's how Wake Up Club is. Like, it won't go off unless it is running as the front side thing.
I think actually there is plans to add support for multiple running applications later in the Vita's life.
Well, so that needs to happen.
Look forward to that.
Yeah. So I did it once, and I got like 5 fucking trophies in a row.
I want to play.
Yeah.
I'm gonna join your club. I need to get it. It's free, right?
It is free. However, you can't really join clubs. I think it is all defined on what time you wake up.
Fuck. Yeah. I'm finding you. I'm hunting you down.
All right. Well, get up at 6:54 every morning.
I can swing that some mornings.
All right.
Hey, you also wrote Uncharted on there, and I just want to get your quick impressions of it.
Oh, on where? Which one?
On your document, Uncharted Vita, you wrote it on the 123 document.
Oh yeah, I played that a bit, and essentially, it's not even worth talking about. Like, hey, what do you think of bad Uncharted? Is like, yep, bad shooting, uninteresting combat, bad platforming. There you go. Nathan Drake looks like a fetus baby, i.e., Chris Redfield from Resident Evil 5. Like,
I'm gonna find the Metacritic just so we can laugh at how well it was reviewed, because that was an assy little game.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some really cool parts to it, and for people who aren't me and just have a Vita and haven't played an Uncharted game, like, there is something enjoyable there to be taken away, but
My favorite part is doing all those fucking stupid-ass rubbings.
I haven't even gotten that far. Like, that sounds fun to me. Like, I want to do the rubbings and showing it up to the light or whatever. Like, it's just the combat doesn't work for me on that system.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got an 80 Metacritic, which is just wholly undeserved. Right. But, yeah.
Also, the melee is absolute horseshit, too. Where it's like, swipe the screen to fight a dude.
So bad.
Yeah. Oh, no, my thanks. God.
Yeah, that's a bad game. I told you the one thing I really like about it is touchscreen buttons on the side of the touchscreen that work really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one thing about it that I think is cool.
I totally zoned out too.
Everything else about it is shitty.
Well, I started it when I started playing it, and I set it down for like 3 minutes, came back to it, and I was like, fuck, man, is this a joke? Like, why is John McClane in this game? I didn't know if he was introduced, but there's a dude who looks like Bruce Willis from that movie that, you know, he was in. Whoa. Okay. Hello? Whoa.
Hey.
Hey.
I don't know what happened there. Maybe the podcast gods want us to wind down.
I think so. I said the magic words and whatever. I don't want to re-explain that joke because it was really stupid and I couldn't even get there.
I'll have to listen for it tomorrow when you post this thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
live free or die hard. Yeah, I think that was the end of it. Yep.
Okay. A good day. A good day to die hard.
Yep.
Can we hypothesize in the next podcast about potential Die Hard sequels and what we could call them?
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Die Hard Lilu Multipass.
you're getting into anime territory there.
Yeah.
You need to come up with something like let's see, what could we come up with? We already have Live Free or Die Hard.
If you want to, one of my favorite arcade games is the Die Hard arcade game. And it was actually released in Japan under the name of Dynamite Cop. And there's Dynamite Cop 2, which came out in the United States. And it is literally a sequel to the Die Hard arcade game. Just as stupid, but even way crazier, way funnier, just stupid as fucking nonsense. So if you like Die Hard and you like Die Hard video games that are just really dumb, go check out Dynamite Cop.
I will. That sounds so familiar, and I'm wondering if I've ever played it. I'm looking into it right now.
Yeah.
Interesting. What was it for? It was for arcade, you say.
PS1, right? Maybe.
Okay, I will look into it. And...
Yeah, and I think that
was it for
Die
Dreamcast?
Hard was like, yeah, it might have been. I think, yeah,
I played Dynamite Cop for Dreamcast long ago. Dynamite it was like Cop shitty 2. 3D, right?
Yeah. Like,
yeah, yes.
Yep,
I remember that game. It was on a Dreamcast demo disc that we somehow had.
Yeah,
that had like Power Stone and all kinds of shit on it.
I want to say that the Die Hard game came out for like the Saturn or something.
Okay, this might have been Dynamite Cop 2.
Yeah, Dynamite Cop 2 is the one that's like ultra garbage, but way good for it.
I'm pretty sure I have in fact played that game,
like the Time Crisis of Brawlers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I am almost certain I've played that game. That's awesome.
So there we go. Take that truth nugget and put it in your pocket. Save that one for later. Come back next week and we'll talk some more about bullshit that you don't give a shit about.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. This has been a ton of fun as usual. And Jamie for making a special guest appearance.
Hopefully we can rope him back into making more appearances and dropping out of med school and growing a huge beard and starting up a drug habit, maybe. And,
exactly. In the meantime, go buy a Vita. That's about it.
Don't buy GTA.
Don't buy fucking GTA.
And if you do, take a YouTube video of it and spam Griffin's email link with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Write me about how good GTA is. And I'll print your email out and poop on it.
I feel like I have to buy it now. It's like a requirement.
Oh.
No, I won't buy it. I really don't.
Yeah. Oh.
All right, dude.
All right. These mixed emotions are getting too much for me. I got to go too.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun.
It has been.
All right. Bye.
Bye.